Microphones are live.
Okay. Good morning and welcome to the August 9th San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors meeting. Would you please rise and join us in the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, thank you, and be seated. Madam Clerk, could you be so kind to read the changes to today's agenda?
Certainly. The changes to the agenda are the added items under closed session, under pending litigation. Number 16, Sunny Acres Incorporated et al. Versus County of San Luis Obispo et al., CV090360. 17, Edna Valley Watch, Philip G. De Silva versus the County of San Luis Obispo et al., 18, Katie et al., versus the County of San Luis Obispo et al. All requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you, and et al. As well.
Et al.
Before we begin, I wanted to announce, if you have not seen in the media in various places, we're happy that the second solar project is beginning to conduct job fairs. So those of you who are listening or interested, that's the first solar company for the Topaz Solar Farm. This Thursday, they're doing two job fairs, one from 9 to noon at the Carrizo Plains Heritage Association building. That's 9 to noon on Thursday at the Carrizo Plains Heritage Association building. And then in the evening from 3 to 6 at the Embassy Suites Hotel on Thursday. They are also conducting job fair then as well. And then Friday the next day on the 12th, up at Paso Robles from 8 to 11 in the Paso Robles Inn ballroom. So there are three opportunities this week for general laborers, janitorial staff, forklift operators, skid steers, heavy equipment, civil superintendents, structural superintendents, a variety of different jobs. There is more information on the topazsolar.com website. They've already begun to hire a few people locally, office managers and contract managers and outreach consultants, so that's good. So we really do encourage all of our local folks who are looking to work on these projects to go to one of these job fairs and contact any of our offices if you need more information, because we would be happy to provide it. And with that, we will move into our consent agenda. I have one public request to speak on consent, and that is Jeff Edwards on A13. Mr. Edwards.
Good morning, Mr. Hill, board members. My name is Jeff Edwards. I'm a longtime county resident, and I wanted to speak on A13 concerning flooding in Oceano this morning. First off, I'd like to thank Jill Ogren for spending a lot of time on the phone with me yesterday answering a number of questions in this regard. Notwithstanding the good intentions of Public Works, it's my opinion that the San Luis Obispo County Public Works effort is falling short with regard to flooding in Oceano. Throwing standard engineering solutions at the problem is not enough. Any real solution must look at the big picture, which necessarily includes the 60-acre airport property, the county airport. A13 on your agenda today is about short-term solutions, and I'd like to speak to the Meadow Creek Lagoon proposals. If you boil it all down, there's really two proposals to deal with Meadow Creek and the lagoon system, and that's a pipe and pump along Sandpiper Lane to the ocean, and then a pump and pipeline over the Sand Canyon flapgates. And let's think about that for a second. We've got flapgates that you can open and release water, and yet we're going to put a pump in to pump water over the flapgates. If you know Harold Guyton, one of the stalwart members of the community in years past, he manned those flapgates. He operated them manually, and now we're going to put in a pump and pipe the water over. That doesn't make sense to me. In terms of permitting, these have been characterized as an emergency effort. Well, you can't get an emergency permit until you have an emergency, and so far we're not there. Standard applications have to be filed, And it's my belief that, what's the equivalent of surface water discharges are not going to be easily permittable, let alone having these fixes in place by this winter. Cannon's been hired for the engineering. Again, I consider Standard Engineering Solutions. They've suggested they're going to have something ready to go by December 1st of this year. I've got money to bet on that situation. Nothing in the short-term solutions address the flooding in the area that's considered the island. Aloha Place, where the sanitation district facility is. Lakeside Drive, Security Court, Maui Circle. There's nothing in any of this that's going to address those problems. That's the area that was hardest hit in December of last year. My suggestion is you have to shift resources away from short-term solutions and work on something more comprehensive. Refocus efforts on projects you can permit and finance and implement. Start with the 2004 study that was prepared for Oceano. Start with that study and expand on it. In 4 months, we don't have much time to do anything, and it's been 8 months since the last flood. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. And that's all I have on consent public requests, so I'll close it to the public, bring it back to the board, and I think he's still trying to sell our airport. Mr. Meacham.
Comment on A4, please.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
None, sir.
Mr. Teixeira.
Comment on A3, 4, and 6.
3, 4, 6. And Mr. Patterson?
None.
Okay. Mr. Teixeira, let's start with you on 3.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I would just like to commend County Parks and staff for requesting the funds on this grant. I think this is a great way to get kids involved in the outdoors. So much time spent, they spend indoors doing computer games and other things. This is just a great program. It came to my attention probably 3 or 4 years ago when I was on the Parks Commission. I just think it's a great way to get them involved, and I wholeheartedly support it, and I thank staff for coming forward with it.
Okay. Mr. Meacham on 4, and then Mr. Teixeira on 4.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Quickly, I wanted to thank General Services, and especially my legislative assistant, Vicki Shelby, when we spent some office hours out in Shandon, recognized from the school district that they had not a very good budget like a lot of others, and we're looking for some assistance from the computer standpoint, and we have surplus computers that are going to go to the Shandon school, and I greatly appreciate that, and I know they appreciate it even more so. So thank you very much.
Okay. Mr. Teixeira, did you want to follow up on that?
I just want to follow up on what Supervisor Meacham said, and I commend county staff for coming forward with this, and it's a great use of county resources, and I think we need to do more of this.
Okay.
Thank you.
How about A6, Mr. Teixeira?
A6, question for students. Excuse me. Great program for vocational nursing, and I really appreciate Cuesta's involvement in this and the things that we do with the health department to make these kids better and increase their education.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Move to approve the consent calendar.
Second.
Okay, move to approve consent by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Teixeira. If there's no further comments, roll call, please, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Thank you very much. Okay, we are going to move on into public comment. I believe we are, yes. And let's begin because we have some presentation here. Lisa Wilkerson. If you would be so kind. Lisa, are you ready to come up? And we have some of our esteemed Sheriff Department members. Ms. Wilkerson, please.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Lisa Wilkerson. Board of Supervisors, staff, and guests, thank you for giving me the opportunity to express my appreciation to two heroes, Deputy Chris Om and Sergeant Tony Perry from the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Department. I'm here today to share an amazing story about two heroes who gave my family and I our lives back. The story began soon after a family tragedy. I lost my brother in a fire. I was on the other side of the flames but could not reach him. Days after the fire, I noticed I was being followed. I kept myself focused on being there for my family and was hoping the man would go away, but he didn't. Things just got worse. My whole life was turned upside down. The stalking continued, and I learned quickly that I could no longer have contact with people. If I was seen with other people, it would only put them in danger. So I went into isolation. When I met Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry, it was under very unfortunate circumstances. Things took a turn for the worse for my family and I. My mother became very ill with a life-threatening illness. The stalking was more intense than ever, and my mother was now the target along with the people she worked with. That day, I made the call to the Sheriff's Department and got in contact with Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry. That was the call that changed our lives forever. Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry were amazing, an amazing team that worked so well together. They knew the situation needed immediate attention. It was like a bomb ready to explode. Too many people were now targets, and someone was going to get hurt. Fortunately, Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry were experts at defusing this type of situation. With the clock ticking, they knew they had to act fast, and they knew exactly what wires to cut to prevent an explosion. They won the first battle, but the journey to justice was just beginning. Sergeant Perry and Deputy Om went above and beyond the call of duty and gave me hope, support, and the tools I needed to work through the impossible. They became my teachers, and through their examples, I learned to be strong and have the courage to fight for justice. And in the end, we fought the battle together and won. Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry are the reason I'm here today. They are the reason my family and I are alive and no longer have to isolate ourselves and live in fear. We are now free because Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry protected and defended us to the end. Deputy Chris Om, Sergeant Tony Perry, Under Sheriff Martin Basti, and Sheriff Ian Parkinson, would you come forward and accept this small token of my appreciation? This photograph is for all of you and was created from the hope you gave me. Knowing I wasn't alone during the most frightening moments of my life inspired me to capture beauty. This photo is a symbol of the hope and freedom you gave me. Thank you all so much for caring and making so many sacrifices. You are the inspiration behind everything I capture and create. Your examples and kindness guided me out of a storm and inspired me to carry on your legacy of helping others. The gift you gave me will never be forgotten. It's forever in my heart. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Wilkerson. We do have certificates of appreciation for their outstanding work to Deputy Om and Sergeant Perry. So if you would come on up, and then if you wanted to take a photo with Miss Wilkerson, we'd be happy to do that with all of you, Tony and Chris. Okay, I'm not sure. And if you wanted to, you guys come back in here. Get in here, Marty.
Thank you very much for these cards.
Yeah, we appreciate that, Lisa. Beautiful. All right.
Just keep pushing the button.
Okay.
All right.
I did.
Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you, Sheriff. Okay. All right, we greatly appreciate the work that our deputies do to protect our community and our citizens, and we're always happy to honor them. So thank you, Lisa, and we appreciate it. Now on to other public comment. John Waddell, please, if you would.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, members of the board. I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department and the project manager for the Los Osos Wastewater Project. And there's new legislation that recently passed to assist low-income households in Los Osos. I want to make your board and the public aware of it. Assembly Bill 1125, which was sponsored by Assemblyman Kacho Sajian, who's our former He's our local assemblyman and the former District 4 County Supervisor. This bill passed by unanimous vote of both houses and was signed by Governor Brown last week on August 4th. It allows the county to use both grant funds and low-interest loan funds to reduce charges for low-income households for the wastewater project. For example, if, say, a grant amount that would reduce costs, you know, across the whole project for entire service area by, say, $5 a month, we have the ability to develop a program that could target some, you know, a portion or all of those grant funds to low-income households and have a much more significant savings for those low-income households. The county has discretion on how we're going to structure this assistance program. So in the next year, as we're moving into construction and on the engineering side, we'll be working on the financial side to develop the program policies for your board's consideration on how to structure the program. We'll also be developing public outreach materials and application assistance for residents in Los Osos for both this program and other assistance programs that are out there. There are multiple assistance programs, both from USDA to community development block grants, to State Water Board, and so we're going to be developing outreach and assistance to help the maximum amount of people qualify for as much assistance as possible.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Mr. Waddell, for bringing this news forward. We are indeed very grateful to Assemblyman Asajian for carrying this legislation forward. It is a significant piece in the ongoing puzzle or challenge to try to bring the greatest amount of affordability we can to this project. And it is modeled after similar programs that public utilities like the phone company, the gas company, and the electric companies can offer. So I think we've opened a new realm of possibilities, and we're getting some interest from other corners of the state. I think we have a groundbreaking piece of legislation here, and we really appreciate everybody's work on it.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Waddell, and I think we all join you in thanking Cacho for carrying the bill for us. Gwen Taylor, followed by Ben DeFada.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor, and I'm a resident of Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. This previous announcement falls right into what I have to put before you this morning. This sewer project has had more twists and turns than a crooked mile. The players in the project are numerous and appear to have their fingers in as many pots as are available. From the ISJ habitat conservation that both affect the whole community but seem to be financed by the assessment district only, as well as other projects. The USDA, the State Revolving Fund, interim funding, grant funding, change proceedings all bring in the need now for a forensic audit or forensic accounting. The need for an internal audit with proactive fraud examination components has great need. This project is affecting many people's lives and has been in progress for a number of years. The overall project has been attracting a large number of players from many fields. The monies involved have and are coming from numerous sources. This can create inefficiency, waste, and fraud. A local government agency is not immune from fraud. A forensic audit can uncover waste, inefficiency, fraud prevention, fraud detection, and fraud deterrence. This is a need for a certified forensic audit of the project so far by an outside set of eyes other than the county. The county should not be involved. The county has found mechanisms to provide funds for project. Supervisor Gibson deems necessary under budget adjustments and internal audit with proactive fraud examination components is necessary now, not later. Fraud must be a deterrent for all, but funds must be made available and can be made available if there is a will. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Al Barrow.
Good morning, Chairman Hill, Board, Public, Sheriff, Undercover Agents. Ben DeFatta here from the bankrupt community of Los Osos. I talked to the public about our plight because you're not listening. You can't put a square peg in a round hole, and that's what you're trying to do. Mr. Gibson and Board, wake up to reality. Get rid of your expensive gravity collection project. Have you noticed that your wallet and stock portfolio has gotten thinner? Many people that live in Los Osos Prohibition Zone never had a stock portfolio to worry about. Whatever Gibson, Ogren, and Waddell have been trying to do with their gravity collection system for Los Osos in the last 5 years is not working. Whatever they have been trying to do has cost my community millions of dollars the last 5 years, which now has totaled about $40 million with still no sewer. You have never even bothered to call other municipalities that are using alternatives that cost half the price of your darling gravity project. Now that Mr. Gibson and his hand-picked staff have a track record, the people are now aware of all their costly mistakes. In private industry, you would be gone by now, or in jail. Are these people amateurs that are running this project? Seems like it. Is it they are inept or don't have the ability? Seems like that too. Cronyism? You bet, a long time. Is it corruption running the project? Seems like it. Are they unprofessional, wasting the people's money? $10 million in the last 5 years? Where's the people's representative for District 2? Why, he's out bankrupting the people of Los Osos, running the show with vigor like a dictator, never once veering away from his antiquated, unaffordable, overpriced energy hog, not-so-green, stinking gravity collection system. Never bothering to seek the better technology of affordable, low-pressure, or vacuum systems that are 100 times better for oceanside communities that were built on a sand dune and much cheaper. He blocked an affordability study because it would have showed gravity was unaffordable to several thousand property owners. It would cause several thousand people to lose their homes and or businesses. And we're talking several thousand here. He blocked a seismic study because it would have showed that big pipes in deep trenches would break and leak into our only drinking water aquifer and would cost another fortune to repair in case of a seismic event. Along with Maria Kelly and several others, Prabhu Ogren installed moles into our CSD directors when CSD business decisions were being made that were crucial to the survival of our CSD, to the CSD's income. She was an expert in everything and swayed others to vote the county's way and Pablo's way. Conflict of interest.
Thank you, Mr. DeFatta. Appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
See you next
week. Mr. Barrow, followed by Mike Brown.
Good morning. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low-Income Housing. Preface my remarks again with loving kindness for all creatures. And I would like to respectfully dispute Mr. Gibson's comments about how wonderful this effort is on making the Los Osos unaffordable sewer affordable. Not happening. You would be lucky to have 10% funding, that's grant funding, in this program. The bankruptcy hearing, which I attended last Thursday and Friday at the bankruptcy court in Santa Barbara, stated that the loan, the first assessment was $25 million would be the cost of it. That's what we're paying for that one. You have to add that on because we're paying for that. If you add that with the $189 million and you're looking at $220 million or something like that. Put that on the background of, go to the front page of the New Times You have a picture of four homeless people saying, we'd like to work, we'd like to have an opportunity. We have people on the street here looking for jobs. The average income here in this county is $10 an hour. Hello, how can a family that's or a household afford a $200 or $300 a month sewer bill plus increasing water bills? It just doesn't pencil out. Come on, you guys need to get a realistic viewpoint of what you're doing. The level of harm that you're doing to people is not acceptable. There's a lot of pain here that's going to be taking place. You know, Bruce, you live in a fairly affluent family. You have a big orange orchard. You make a lot of money. You had a successful career.
Mr. Barrow, can you direct your comments to the chair, please, if you wouldn't mind?
Want me to look at you?
I would like you to address the... Yeah, that would help, too, but you could address your comments to the chair. That's part of the agreement here.
Are you going to give me that time back? No, of course not. Well, I don't care what you think, Adam Hill, because I want to tell you something. I'm talking to you, okay? Anything else you want? You want to take the words and put it in my mouth? Is that what you would like to do? You don't want to hear the truth? You don't want to hear the fact that the stock market dropped 600 and some points yesterday, that the economy is in bad shape, there's no jobs, that you in this county are going to have your funding cut by a commission, a federal commission, in September. We're in trouble. We can't afford these really expensive, unnecessarily expensive sewer costs. You could do it for half the cost. And I don't appreciate your attitude towards me.
Thank you, Al. Mr. Brown, followed by Lindy Owen.
Good morning. I'm Mike Brown, representing CoLab. It was brought to my attention that the county issued a request for proposal for an economic impact study of the strategic growth initiative, and it also represents the climate action plan initiative, and this may be a good idea, although maybe it's the horse after the cart. This might have been something that could have been done before the initiative was launched, but we would suggest that perhaps pull it back and broaden it a little bit. The RFP says the ballpark price is more or less $34,000. But the RFP is very detailed and asks the prospective consultants to study a lot of things. And one of the things that you might want to look at is a broader contract with a marketing or a market analysis component about what type of houses and living people really want, which goes to the heart of the strategic growth initiative. As those of you who are here and the others may know, in 2005, before the whole initiative was really launched, the county conducted a poll and asked people what type of housing they preferred. And that survey included both the incorporated cities and the unincorporated area. And the responses range from a low of about 55% in the cities preferred the single-family freestanding house. And you got pretty near 70% when you got to the unincorporated area in the North County. And you may want to use this study to revisit this a little bit and look at how the economics work in terms of the major strategic initiatives and regulations which are part of that. So I think you've got a good opportunity here. You may want to put a little more money into that study and broaden it. And as I recall in reading some of the questions in the original poll back in 2005 were kind of leading, you know. So the question wasn't just what type of living do you prefer, but it had leading comments like, well, if you didn't have any parks and no services, would you prefer to live in a single-family house or would you prefer to live in a denser situation with those services? So I think this is a good time to step back, come up for air, and maybe you ought to bring that study in here and kick it around and let everybody talk about it and then reissue. Thank you very much. Any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Ms. Owen, followed by Eric Greening.
Good morning. Lindy Owen from the $250 a month to flush zone in Los Osos. I wanted to begin with asking Mr. Grant how the investigation into Maria Kelly and Pava Ogren's conflict of interest and relationship is going. We haven't heard anything, and like the Lisa Schicker investigation, which just basically aged and fell into the wastebasket and never basically got looked at, I don't want this one to die. I think it's extremely important. Losing our wastewater, our waste franchise in the bankruptcy court. It was our second income maker, and it basically leaves the LOCSD incapable of continuing on for any length of time. It was the money that did keep us afloat. And without Maria Kelly or Dan Gilmore, her hand-selected general manager, who also is best friends with Pava Ogren, without their close loyalty to Mr. Pava Ogren, the director of public works, this would not have happened. Another thing that wouldn't have happened was, here's who you're working with, Montgomery Watson Harsey. We've talked about them forever. This is an article out of the Bay News. The district had some leverage in the form of a claim it filed against Montgomery Watson Harsey with the Construction Management Association of America. A summary in the district's claim stated that Montgomery Watson Harsey failed to objectively and ethically evaluate wastewater treatment system alternatives, overcharged or double-charged the district on several occasions, should not have competed for the design phase of the project because as the project manager it had a conflict of interest, and that it improperly recommended pre-qualifying bidders for subcontractors and accepted some subcontract bids that were higher than the estimates for self-serving reasons. Now, Maria Kelly made sure that that was dropped. That suit is no longer being filed against Montgomery Watson Harsey, but Pava Ogren and this county are still doing business with this wonderful firm. I wanted to also just point out, the Nacimiento project, I believe, is the elephant in the room. 50% of it is unsold, and I think Mr. Gibson has been very unfair in not telling the community that that was the plan for the future water supply. If we knew, we would probably take different actions than we've been able to. I wanted to briefly, in 25 seconds, say that the alternative system that we propose could actually take care of septic pumpings all over this county. They would not be going to Santa Maria. This county would take some responsibility by setting up an incinerator at our waste plant, which would be collecting just a partially collected area that actually is going to reduce nitrates. The overall plan is unnecessary, and when we have an earthquake, we're in trouble. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. Mr. Greening, followed by Jeff Edwards.
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and when I have time at the computer and I'm not just answering a pile of emails, there are a couple of sites I sometimes visit. One of them is called the Oil Drum. It's an excellent compendium of information about different energy-related issues and policies, and they have a regular recurring feature every day or two called Drumbeat, which is basically articles that appear in all kinds of press, blogs, et cetera, that relate to the subject and to which you can link if you want to go further with it. And you can find their Drumbeat archives. August 5th, they linked to one from a publication called Rig Zone, which was actually reflecting or reporting on a publication of the U.S. Energy Information Administration. The title in Rig Zone was Monterey Oil Shale Seen as Next Wave of U.S. Exploration and Production Efforts. And the report from the U.S. Energy Information Administration basically called it U.S. Shale and Gas and Shale Oil Plays Monterey Santos Play. I guess they call it playing for some reason. In any event, the upshot is you will keep hearing some sort of tip of the iceberg oil issues coming up, such as Acceleron, and I do appreciate the clarification relative to the properties on the Carrizo. It's an issue that the Monterey Shale extends from the San Ardo area to the Santa Maria area and inland to western Kern County. It's not continuous, but it's a large portion of the area. So the heart of it is in our county. And essentially, the information that's now being put out is it's the coming thing in the oil business. They see a potential for 15.4 billion barrels, more than twice the total in both the Bakken and Eagle Ford oil shale areas. And so I think we need to look at any oil-related project that comes before us as a tip of a much larger iceberg on which we need to be setting policy that relates to that much larger iceberg. And we need to scrutinize our energy element to see whether it's strong enough to withstand the onslaught. From a climate action point perspective, the best thing we can do with oil is leave it in the ground until such time as it gets scarcer and is more efficiently used on a global basis, is worth more after the climate has stabilized. There's no urgency about pulling it out of the ground now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Edwards?
Thank you, Mr. Hill. Board, Jeff Edwards, longtime resident. I hadn't intended to speak on the wastewater project, but after Mr. Waddell's little update, I thought it might be timely. It appears that the good intentions of Assemblyman Nasajian, I'm just not clear on the implications for other ratepayers. It looks like this is a zero-sum game. That is, low-interest loan proceeds and grants are going to be used to reduce payments for the lower-income folks, but that's got to come from somewhere. And I'd like to hear a discussion about, you know, what the implications are for the other ratepayers. I think that's relevant. And in terms of project costs, that really should be our focus. If we can keep the project costs down, it's going to be affordable by design. And yet we're spending money wildly. The contract you let just a couple of weeks ago for $5 million with Camp Dresser and McGee to redesign the collection system and provide other services. Corollo, I think they're up to about $2 million right now, all told. The plans that are being developed, water recycling plan that may never be used, you're buying properties at inflated prices. Let's keep the cost of the project down. That's how it can be affordable. The other thing, I thought Mr. Waddell might update us on the other loan that we have with the State Water Resources Control Board, $86 million, Clean Water State Revolving Fund. That was approved in March. At that meeting, we were told, this is in Sacramento, and Mr. Gibson was there, we have to be if we have to be back before them by December 6th for them to entertain a further interest rate reduction. Right now it's 2.6%. They said if you meet some criteria and get back to us, it has to be heard by December 6th. They may reduce the interest rate from 2.6 down to maybe 2%. That's millions of dollars. Those are real savings, and I didn't hear anything about that this morning. I would appreciate hearing about what the county's plan is in terms of going back to the state board on December 6th. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. It's the last request I have from the public to speak, so I will close public comment to the public and just remind everybody once again that First Solar is conducting job fairs this week for the Topaz Project Thursday. There's two job fairs, one from 9 to 12 at Carrizo Plains Heritage Association Building and one from 3 to 6 at Embassy Suites Hotel. And then on Friday from 8 to 11 at the Paso Robles Inn Ballroom. So those of you who are interested in submitting resumes or going to the job fair, please do so. Let us know if we can be of help. And with that, Madam Clerk, could I have you introduce our first item of the morning, please?
Certainly. That'd be item C1, a hearing to consider a resolution amending the traffic regulation code to prohibit crosswalks in Los Osos Valley Road at Bush Drive, Los Osos, and on Avila Beach Drive at San Miguel Road, Avila Beach, 2nd and 3rd Districts. This item was introduced on August 2nd, 2011. Recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Chapman, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hi, I'm Brian Chapman with San Luis Obispo County Public Works Department. I'm here to present a hearing to remove crosswalks on various county roads. The two roads in question are Los Osos Valley Road near Bush Drive and Avila Beach Drive near San Miguel Street. The first one I'd like to talk about is Los Osos Valley Road near Bush Drive. This crosswalk was installed in the 1960s to provide access to Sunnyside Elementary School, which has since been closed. In that same time frame, we've installed two traffic signals, one that's been in place for several years at 9th Street, and the one that was recently completed last year at Palisades Avenue. The crosswalk location between the signals would not meet our current county standards for the placement of a crosswalk, and we are recommending that it be removed and signs be installed directing pedestrians to cross at the signals where traffic can be controlled. The other location in Avila Beach, on Avila Beach Drive at San Miguel Street, this crosswalk was installed when the Bob Jones Trail ended at that intersection. The trail has since been moved down to First Street, where their signal was constructed to control the crossing. This location also has sight distance constraints for westbound traffic, and we are recommending that the crosswalk be removed and signs erected to direct traffic, pedestrian traffic to cross at First Street. Our recommended actions are conduct this hearing and then approve the attached resolution removing the crosswalks.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the board for Mr. Chapman?
Indeed. Mr. Chairman, if I might, it just, you know, always seems a little counterintuitive that taking out a crosswalk is somehow a safety improvement. I wonder if you could just go in a little bit of the details as to why, well, the one that I'm familiar with, is not having the pleasure of going to Avila Beach so often, but the one in Los Osos, why that wouldn't meet our current standards and what your case for, you know, a safety improvement by removing that crosswalk is.
Certainly. There were, have been a couple studies done over the last 20 or 30 years that looked at crosswalks and crossings, and crosswalks placed by themselves, especially on routes that have high speeds or volumes or multiple lanes, don't actually reduce pedestrian collision rates, and in some cases they've actually proven to increase them. The crosswalk normally has to be placed in conjunction with other traffic control devices, flashing beacons, or signalization. In the case of the one in Los Osos, specifically, because of the close proximity to the signals, those types of measures wouldn't be as effective. There seems to be some issues with driver attention, and with all the other items going on, being able to cross to the spot where traffic is stopped is preferable.
Okay. And as I understand it, also the activity or now lack of activity at Sunnyside School is a determining factor there. There's not so much of a demand to cross at that particular point, as I understand it.
Yeah. Pedestrian demand has really dropped off substantially, and with the construction of the skate park facing Palisades, that's become the more dominant movement for the pedestrians.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. If there's no further questions, I'd like to open it up to the public, because I do have a request to speak. Mr. Tetsu Ieda? If I'm not sure if I'm saying that correctly, but you can correct me at the lectern, please.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Board of Supervisors, for allowing me to speak today.
Did I get your name right, Mr.?
It's Tetsuo Ueda.
Okay, thank you, sir.
So my name is Tetsuo Ueda, and I'm a resident in Los Osos. I actually live really close to the proposed crosswalk prohibition. And so I'm here to urge the Board to reconsider the removal of this crosswalk. I believe that it's actually vital to the downtown area, is that there are numerous reasons to keep it or even upgrade it with the flashing beacons that Mr. Chapman just referred to. He also knows that since the elementary school has been closed for the past few years, and that he seems to think that there are pedestrians that no longer cross at this location. I think that's further from the truth, and that there are actually still many, the county still uses social services and other organizations use the school. Furthermore, there's also there are also playgrounds that are still used by the community, as well as basketball courts, two baseball diamonds, and a grassy field that people use to cross and use that field and cross at that location as well. It really wouldn't be an impact on the existence of a crosswalk if it weren't for the fact that along Bush Drive, there are also a number of young families with children that live that also cross at that intersection. And I live there too as well. So... Furthermore, the children and adults who live on the south side of the street of Los Osos Valley Road would have a easier time accessing the facilities on the north side, such as the skate park and the park, as well as the community center and library. Furthermore, the sidewalk also on the north side is actually a wider sidewalk. It's smoother, whereas on the south side of the street, that sidewalk that between the Tusamigos restaurant and the Palisades intersection, that sidewalk is actually fairly in disrepair. It's covered with a lot of sand and dirt, and so for those who are handicapped, I think they'd have a much more difficult time accessing that area if there weren't a crosswalk at that location. I guess even another reason to keep or upgrade this crosswalk is that it also encourages people to get out and walk and to not rely so heavily on their cars. And so there are also businesses located on both sides of the street on Los Osos Valley Road that people can access on foot more readily if there were a crosswalk there, such as the Tusamigos restaurant. There's a Hong Kong Chinese restaurant. There's a Rexall Pharmacy, as well as Steve Ostlander's real estate organization. And there's also a number of therapy or marriage and family therapy offices in that kind of location. Okay. So, putting up a crossing prohibited sign would also, I think, would negatively impact the economic health of that Los Osos area, since surrounding businesses wouldn't be able to get out as easily and use these resources. Telling people that they're prohibited from using or crossing the street, I think there might even be a backlash against that. And so, I feel like it would also make the situation a little more dangerous in that drivers would tend to drive faster knowing that they wouldn't have to stop. Okay, good. Finally, great. So I have to disagree with Mr. Chapman's belief that removing this dock walk will really enhance the community livability and safety. Thank you.
We'll see if we can, Mr. Ayuda, if we can get Mr. Chapman perhaps to respond to some of the concerns that you brought up, and we appreciate that. Thank you. And I don't know if Supervisor Meacham had the same idea. Or
well, I do, but I have mm-hmm. You can answer these at the same time. The distance between traffic signals and the speed limit on that road.
Do you want to put up the diagram again? Did we have one, Mr. Chapman, just to make it easier to refer to?
So we have about 200 feet between Bush Street and 9th Street and about 400 feet between Bush Street and Palisades. So they are closely spaced signals. The traveled speeds on there, I don't have a speed survey that's been done recently, but just based on a field review, the last time I was out there, they're probably going about 30, 35 miles an hour. Looking at this location and trying to put in flashing beacons or control the intersection for pedestrian crossings just because of the tight spacing of the signals really would be a difficult thing to do. We'd start seeing vehicle queuing spilling into the other intersections, and it could affect the operation of the corridor. The issues with the south side path, the trail in front of the school's property there is a decomposed granite pathway behind a curb. There have been some issues keeping it clear, and Public Works has been out there several times over the last couple of years to make sure it is graded and smooth.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Well, I really appreciate Mr. Ada coming down and giving us very, very clear and rational testimony on this, and I'm just wondering, you know, we have a lot of policies on our books to encourage pedestrian-friendly neighborhoods. There is a commercial center on the south side of Los Osos Valley Road and a number of, you know, different destinations along this stretch. I came in prepared to go along with staff's recommendation, but I wonder whether a little more reflection on this might be helpful at this point. Mm-hmm. I fully understand the concept that safety improvements may not produce the desired effects. We know that places where stop signs and stop signals are desired sometimes mm-hmm. Might have an opposite effect, and indeed it might be the right thing to remove this crosswalk. But I was thinking of elsewhere on Los Osos Valley Road, east of the Bayview 9th Street intersection. We did a couple of in-street flashing crosswalks, you know, specifically, and that is similarly, it's actually four lanes plus a center turn lane and higher speeds in that part. Those have been well received, and I wonder, before we yank the crosswalk, or, you know, maybe we have a plan here that we might really study the possibility and the cost that similar sort of in-street flashing situation there. Do we have a general sense of what that costs, Mr. Chapman?
Well, the flashing beacon assemblies would probably cost around $20,000. The in-ground flashers, I'd have to talk to a couple people and see what the current costs were for some of those devices.
Okay. I think it would be, you know, I found Mr. Uyeda's comments to be persuasive, too. If maybe your office would work with Mr. Chapman and others before we take action on this today, we could suppose. We're ready. I've been involved, and Mr. Chapman's done a good job, and this is part of a larger thing on the Avila Beach crosswalk, which is greatly improved with the change in with the signalization and such. But if we could perhaps postpone,
would it be possible to continue the Los Osos item separately?
We'll look to County Council about how best to do this. And
certainly, you could continue it.
Okay, so we can take action just on the Avila one, and then postpone the continue the Los Osos one, and let Supervisor Gibson work with Public Works to see if there's a better possibility here.
Sure. And how long would Public Works want? 90 days, six months? How long to get that? Madam Clerk can find us a date certain here.
We could probably do it in 45 to 60 days.
Okay. Do you have something in the 60 to 90 days?
Looking. Sorry.
And while there she's looking, Supervisor Patterson, Supervisor Meacham also have
their
lights on.
Yes, just a
sure
comment. I'm interested. Did you actually do a pedestrian count or an observation of that intersection to see how much it's utilized by pedestrians? It was commented that a lot of people still use the Sunnyside School, even though it's closed as an elementary school. It's still used for other purposes, and people do utilize that crossing now. Were there studies done to determine how many pedestrians utilize it?
We didn't record the intersection or do a formal count, but we had recently reconstructed the curb returns at Bush Drive and Los Osos Valley Road. Mm-hmm. And while we were working on that project, we did not observe a lot of pedestrian crossing.
Okay, thank you. And I am familiar with the crossing in Avila. I've used Bob Jones Trail a lot, and with the addition to the Bob Jones Trail and putting it out at that other intersection, I am supportive of removing that crosswalk, but I would like to see additional work done. And Mr. Chapman, you mentioned that the Los Osos Community Advisory Council was alerted to this recommendation, but did they actually have an opportunity to opine on it or have public comment at the LOCAC?
I don't believe it was discussed at LOCAC.
Okay. Thank you.
Just quickly, I support Supervisor Gibson's desire to look at this a little further, and there, and to get cost, I think the in-ground flashing signals for folks to cross, those have been relatively successful throughout the county. I know we've done a number of them in the North County, so I would support the Avila Beach area removal, but to continue the idea to take a look at this one, because my concern is, once again, and the gentleman brought this up, it may exacerbate the speed in that area as opposed to keeping it down. So I would support that continuing.
Okay. Mr. Teixeira, and then we'll go to County Council, and we'll go back to Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. I, too, support my colleague's recommendation to extend the study on this, and my concern is the fact that when you've got kids involved, even though the school is closed, like my colleagues mentioned, they're still going to be going crossing the street to go over there and play and meet their friends, and the skate park's involved. I just think it's a good idea to take a second look at this and possibly put in the flashing signals, and I support my colleagues on that.
Thank you. Mr. Jensen.
I just wanted to comment that when someone makes a motion to do this, to postpone the action on Los Osos, you should amend C18, that's page 8 of item C1, to delete the first item referring to that intersection.
Along with the title of the resolution?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Gibson, nope. I think our clerk is busily writing that down. If you're ready for a motion,
I will come with a motion on that. Just before I forget, as we look into this, I know that the Los Osos Road Impact Fee Fund is very small, but may be something we could look at for that, and whether we might need a circulation amendment that would get this project into the queue. It might be something we could actually do with funds available. And I see Mr. Honeycutt here and ready to comment.
Honeycutt?
Frank Honeycutt, County Public Works. Just throw out a couple more factoids for you to consider. If you recall, just a few moments ago on, I believe it was A9, we're putting in for a grant. We have a decent chance in the current economic climate, nothing's guaranteed, but we have a decent chance of getting some money to do improvements in that area, sidewalk improvements and widening the road, which be partly grant, equally matched by the road improvement fee for that area. So it's already partially designed, and if the grant were to come, we'd probably see this in about a year or so.
Okay. Thank you for that.
Very good.
Thank you.
Mr. Gibson,
so with that, I would move we approve an amended resolution as suggested by County Council on page 8 to revise the title, delete the item referring to the Los Osos intersection, approve the removal of the Avila Beach intersection, and continue the Los Osos item to October 18th.
Second. Okay. Moved by Supervisor Gibson, second by Supervisor Meacham. Madam Clerk, did you get all of the necessary info? Okay.
And let me just, before ask one more question of staff, is the middle of October adequate to know about this grant that Mr. Honeycutt just referenced?
I'd have to check into that.
It's coming.
Sorry, Frank Honeycutt again. It's a sometime in October when the state will announce who gets the grant, who doesn't. So maybe not.
Okay.
Time in November 8th, if you'd like.
I'd revise my motion to continue to November 8th then.
Okay, and the second agrees. So with that, roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes, thank you. Mr. Yuta, thank you very much.
Yes.
Appreciate that. And I'm sure Mr. Gibson's office will be happy to take any input that you might have after this. Thank you. All right, we're moving on to C2. If you could introduce the next item, Madam Clerk.
Item C2 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Marshall Lewis of the Planning Commission's denial of variance and minor use permit to construct a single-family residence on a bluff top lot in Cayuca, 2nd District. This item was continued from June 21, 2011. Recommend upholding the appeal, approving the application of the minor use permit, coastal development permit, and adopting the negative declaration, and instruct the chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Mr. Jansen, good to see you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Matt Jansen. I have no opening comments other than to introduce Carrie Brown, the project manager.
Ms. Brown.
Good morning, Carrie Brown, county planning staff. This is a continued hearing. The Board of Supervisors heard the applicant's appeal and reviewed the applicant's redesign project on June 21st of this year. At that time, the Board of Supervisors tentatively approved the project and directed staff to return with revised findings and conditions of approval. The staff report includes revised findings and conditions of approval, as well as a mitigated negative declaration. I would like to make one correction to the findings listed in Exhibit A on page C27, finding C, which states, as condition, the proposed project or use satisfies all applicable provisions of Title 22 of the county code. It should be Title 23, and staff also feels it appropriate to add and the local coastal plan. So the revised condition would, or revised finding would read, as condition, the proposed project or use satisfies all applicable provisions of Title 23 of the county code and the local coastal plan. And this concludes staff's presentation.
Okay. Questions of staff And we have received some items that are entered into the record from members of the Cayucas. Mr. Gibson?
I'll speak to those after we close public comment.
Okay. I will open it up to public comment, and Ms. Kirk is here representing the applicant and available for questions, but I don't know if you had any statements you'd need to make, Ms. Kirk.
Good morning. My name is Jamie Kirk, representing the owner, and I'd like to just make a comment to thank the board for their thoughtful consideration on June 21st and moving forward with a tentative motion to approve. We've reviewed the conditions and findings, and we're in support of them, and I look forward to your support this morning.
Okay, any questions from Ms. Kirk from the board?
And if there was some information given to the record, we would just like to have it because we haven't received a copy of that.
Okay, we will make sure that that gets passed to you right now. Are there questions for Ms. Kirk while she's up? Okay, thank you, Ms. Kirk. We're going to then close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Mr. Patterson has questions?
Yes, thank you. Ms. Brown, looking at the environmental determination on page C-246, and also it is a condition of approval, it speaks to the replacement of Monterey cypress that are either removed or impacted on the project. And it does state that the biological resources section of the environmental assessment, it does state that the trees could either be replanted on-site or off-site in the community of Cayucas. And I'm just curious to know who makes the determination as to where the replacement trees would be planted. I don't know that there's actually room on-site to replace the trees on-site, and so I'm curious to know how that's done.
Well, since it's 13 trees, so the total replacement would be 26 trees,
right.
And we didn't think there would be room on-site to replace all trees at the site, and that's why we gave them the option to do it in Cayucas, and it would have to be approved by the planning department as to the location, and we could actually also involve the advisory council if your board desires.
Very good. I would like some determination as to an appropriate place where they do have a meaningful habitat value as well as a future.
Okay. Mr. Meacham?
Thank you. And Carrie, along the same lines, I know that recently we had a situation with trees where they had to be replaced on because of a grading permit, and I found that they were pretty small. I mean, they were like a gallon trees. What are these sizes? And I guess what I'm looking for is a way to increase the size but reduce the numbers so that their chance of living are a lot better. Because a lot of times when we plant these small ones, we lose a lot of those either through the summertime or deer or whatever the case may be. And if there were an opportunity to reduce the number but increase the size of the planting, maybe that would help.
We didn't specify, but I think we could also specify a larger size within that condition.
But, I mean, if you specified a larger size, it would reduce the number of required trees. Would that?
We could do that. We generally do like to have a 2-to-1 replacement ratio. Mm-hmm. But it's up at your discretion.
Thank you.
Well, I think that's a good idea, but I think that we should stick to the ratio.
Yeah.
Just because these are, these are trees that are important to the character of the community, it would be good to make sure that we have trees that are survivable as best as we can. And I know our resident arborist might be able to explain in greater detail how that condition works.
Actually, it's the condition of the tree when it's planted,
right.
Not the size so much. And it's been proven that smaller trees have greater survivability than the larger ones, but it is something that I think we do need to work on, in terms of the size, but I would leave that to the planning department. I think the ratio is important that we have a 2-to-1 replacement, and then they want to negotiate the size to ensure survivability. Actually, the applicant is required to see that the trees are established, and if they aren't, they have to replace them. And so I think we have the actual assurances in place that we get the appropriate mitigation.
Okay.
Well, I didn't mean to raise this issue, but I think this is something that we could talk about from a maybe an ordinance at some point down the line. Thanks.
Sure. Sounds good. Mr. Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Appreciate my colleagues' concern about tree mitigations. As you might expect, I remain opposed to this project as it's designed. The letters that I handed out were from two members of the community who happened to be members of the Advisory Council who spent a lot of time on this. They are not letters of an official position of the Advisory Council, but they speak, I think, very eloquently to the issue of community character and how this particular project does not fit with the community of Cayucas, which was my main source of concern on this. I won't be making a motion. Should a motion come forward to confirm the tentative motion, I would like to speak to a couple of specifics on the findings and conditions.
Okay. Very good. I would like to say, you know, and I understand views haven't changed as to the tentative approval that we spoke to about 6 weeks back or so. But I am, and it's no fault of Ms. Kirk's, I'm sure she has worked very hard to try to mitigate her client. But I am rather disturbed that this extremely obnoxious and crude sign continues to be posted on the building that exists there. I thought when we had approved that Mr. Or Dr. Lewis was going to make some sort of good faith effort to try to mend relations with the community, and I don't see this as in any sense doing anything good, and I think he's finding himself at the Coastal Commission because he has angered quite a few of the residents in the community. And I'm speaking to you, Ms. Kirk, as you're his representative. I know that you have urged him to not do these things and to take that sign down, but this is, I think this is really obnoxious, and I can understand the concerns that the residents have about a lot of the issues, but this in particular, I think, is an incredibly unneighborly gesture, to say the least, on his part, and I would hope that you would urge him to do so, to remove that sign as soon as possible. With that said, I would look towards the board for a motion.
I'll move staff's recommendation.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Meacham. Second by Supervisor Teixeira. Supervisor Gibson wanted to speak on the same conditions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I indicated, I won't be supporting the motion, but I would like to, for the record, state my objections. I don't believe, in looking at the findings on page C27, I don't believe this board can make the finding A. I'm not suggesting that this project needs an EIR, but I do not believe that the aesthetic impacts of this project have been mitigated to a level of insignificance. I don't believe we can make finding B, which is that it's consistent with the county general plan, which would include consistency with the Estero area plan, their clear language about the desired protections specifically of cypress trees that I don't believe have been made there. I don't believe we can make finding E, which speaks to the consistency of the project with character of the immediate neighborhood. Staff caught the typo on finding C about Title 22, and the irony being it may meet the provisions of Title 22 if it were in the inland zone. On the conditions of approval, I don't believe that off-site mitigation of cypress trees really is going to mitigate the aesthetic impacts of this particular project, and I don't believe that the conditions regarding the engineering of the foundation in a very sensitive and eroding bluff in many instances aren't strong enough to actually mitigate potential consequences of the installation of that foundation. So with that said, having that on the record, I appreciate it, and we'll yield the floor.
Okay. Your thoughtful comments duly noted, as are the comments from Cayugas Advisory Council, which I think are also thoughtful and useful, and I will call for a roll call vote, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Aye.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
No.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Thank you. All right. We will be moving on. Thank you, Kerry. And Madam Clerk, if you would introduce the next item, C3.
That would be C3, a hearing to review and consider the Portecitos Mobile Home and Garden Parks appeal of the Mobile Home Rent Review Board decision
Fourth District, instruct chairperson to sign the resolution to ratify and adopt the decision and findings of the Mobile Home Rent Review Board, and determine that a further board hearing shall be set at the second regular meeting of the Board of Supervisors if necessary.
Okay. I don't see staff, and so I see our county council, though, has just come up, and perhaps she'll help me. This is an appeal hearing, though. There's a little bit of confusion, perhaps, because there is I don't see Mr. Bench or someone from planning, but there had been an email sent by the appellant that he was interested in withdrawing his appeal. So if you could perhaps guide me on how best to go about doing this, Ms. McDonald, that would be appreciated.
Thank you, Chairman Hill. This is Whitney McDonald, County Council. That is correct. I believe Mr. Bench received an email from the appellant indicating he wished to withdraw his appeal, although I don't believe that staff was able to confirm that in any other manner, either by phone call or, you know, any other further correspondence. And because of the nature of this appeal and the interests of other tenants, our office suggested that we go ahead and hold a hearing unless, you know, the appellant actually appeared and confirmed that he wished to withdraw it. I see some members of the I see that the Porticos, who are the owners of the mobile home park, are here, and Mr. Bench has arrived, and I believe there are other tenants here as well. And so I would suggest that we go ahead and hold the hearing. I believe that the staff report indicates and is clear that the board only has two options here, which is either to determine that a further hearing is required and then set that hearing for a date certain, which is to the second regular meeting after this meeting, mm-hmm. or to simply ratify and adopt the findings of the Mobile Home Rent Review Board.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. McDonald. I think that has almost given Mr. Bench enough time to get ready. Are you ready, Mr. Bench?
Thank you. Thank you, County Council. We're having a lively debate back at the Planning Department on another project, so okay. I appreciate your patience. I do want to pass out a follow-up to the email correspondence I've had with the appellant. This morning he confirmed that he's withdrawing his appeal.
Ted. Okay. So. We do have an email confirmation from Mr. Richards, as Mr. Bench has passed out for the record.
Okay. So at this point, I'm ready. I would like to go ahead and make the presentation, allow the board to hold the hearing. But at any time, the board can decide, now that you've seen that the appeal's been withdrawn, the board can go ahead and allow the hearing to proceed and then decide whether to ratify the Rent Review Board's action, or you can say, no, the appeal's been withdrawn, end of discussion.
Ms. Griffin?
It is your call.
Just a couple of things. First off, I want to apologize. The director and I had Mr. Bench in another meeting trying to figure out another issue, so we weren't here at the start of the hearing. And it is up to your board. We have a withdrawn appeal. Typically, when we have a person who's withdrawn their appeal, we don't hold a hearing. You just acknowledge that the appeal's been withdrawn and move on with no decision. However, your board could choose to hear Ted's presentation and affirm the decision of the Mobile Home Rent Board.
If we don't have the hearing, then it does automatically affirm the decision by the...
I believe so.
That's correct.
Is that Ms. McDonald want to clarify so we make sure we...
Actually, I believe you would need to formally ratify and adopt the findings in order to have that kind of that loop closed.
Okay.
If you decide to not hold the hearing, I believe it would essentially you would not be acting on the Mobile Home Rent Review Board's decision at all.
I think that would be okay. The safest route would probably be, though, to hold the hearing and make a decision on whether or not you want to ratify and adopt the findings.
Okay, Ted, let's have the hearing.
Thank you. Good morning, Board. Ted Bench with county staff, both representing the Rent Review Board and the County Planning Department. Very quickly, the Puerto Coast Mobile Home Park is in Oceano, and I forget exactly, I think they have 58 spaces. They have applied for a rent increase, what we call a hardship exception request, a exception from the county's mobile home rent stabilization ordinance. The Mobile Home Rent Review Board considered that application. They had two public hearings, and they permitted a rent increase of $21.95 per month for each one of the 58 spaces. One park resident has appealed that decision. The park resident had three issues. The first one was the cost of operating the park reviewed for every single year that the park has been in operation? And the answer is no. The rent stabilization ordinance directs staff and the county to look at the first year of operation and the most recent year of operation and see what the profit level was in both of those years. If the park owner is allowed to keep a continuous profit margin as long as he owns the park. So if it shows that the profit margin is dipping, that he's receiving less now than he did in his first year, he's entitled to a rent increase. And the Rent Review Board looked at the numbers and said that would allow a $21.95 rent increase for each of the spaces in the park. I'll show that really quick. In their first year of operation, their profit margin was 11.19%. Last year, it was 9.75%. So that entitled them to a $21.95 a month increase. We did not look at every single year that the park's been in operation. Issue two, does staff know that the owner of the park took out several loans over the years? The answer is no, staff does not know about the other loans that the park owner has taken out. They could be for various other uses. The loan information or the loan payment didn't even show up on her hardship application. So staff didn't even consider loan payments or interest payments in its formula, in its calculation. We do know that Mr. Portico took out a loan a couple years ago for some new fencing and road work in her park, and she reported that as maintenance expenses. So we looked at that, but we also looked at how much she spends on the average for maintaining her park. And we said, okay, that work that's being done on the fence and the road, that's quite a lot of money that's being spent this year for that activity, but that's not how much they normally spend on maintaining the park. So we looked at a normal year, the maintenance amount that they spend in a normal year of operating the park, and that's what we used in the formula when we figured out the rent increase that could be permitted for this park. The third issue was, why do all park residents have to pay the flood control fee, even if their part of the park is not in the flood hazard area? And the answer to that is that the south end of the park is up against the Arroyo Grande flood control channel, and the county requires a maintenance fee of all property owners that are along that channel. So the park owner gets a flood control maintenance fee on her property tax bill. It's a government fee, and that, by state law, can be passed on to the resident. That's the short answer. The other thing is, by state court, the Supreme Court, state Supreme Court actually made the call that when a resident pays their rent, they're paying for using the whole park, not just their individual space. So they're paying to use the parts that are in the flood hazard area, such as the recreation area and the roads. So they should help to pay for, their rent is going not only to maintain their space, but to maintain the park as well. The Rent Review Board did not make any decisions on the rent, flood channel maintenance fee. That was not part of the discussion in front of the Rent Review Board. So to sum it up, when you have an appeal in front of your board, as County Council mentioned a minute ago, the County Rent Control Mobile Home Rent Stabilization Ordinance requires that the board consider the record and the decision of the Rent Review Board, and you can either ratify the Rent Review Board's action, or you can determine that a separate hearing is needed to go over the facts once again. So at this point, staff would recommend that your board open the floor to the public, allow them to speak, the public and the appellant, if the appellant is present. And then after that, your board may make a decision on whether to ratify the rent increase decision of the Rent Review Board and adopt the resolution that's attached to the staff report, or you can decide that a separate hearing should be held to go over the issues further. And time has been reserved on August 23rd if your board chooses to do that. The staff recommends that your board of supervisors ratify the action of the Rent Review Board to increase the rent by $21.95 for each of the spaces in the mobile home park. But again, staff will carry out the wishes of your board. And that concludes staff presentation.
Okay. Any questions for staff? There is a withdrawn appellant, so I don't think we're going to be going, but I will go to the public unless you have questions beforehand, Mr. Gibson.
Let's go to the public first, maybe.
Okay. I have no request to speak from the public. This is becoming a low drama hearing, increasingly so. So I will go to Supervisor, close it to the public, and bring it back to the board and go to Supervisor Meacham and then Supervisor Gibson.
Just a quick question, Mr. Bench. In regard to the percentage of profit that has been suggested, is that a guaranteed profit margin?
You can say it's guaranteed because the Rent Review Board can always say, well, what was the profit margin in the first year? They should always be able to get at least that much. And the ordinance permits them to have a rent increase. But again, the ordinance also gives the Rent Review Board the authority to make a decision, a different decision, if it chooses to.
And are there any requirements that are placed upon the mobile home area or the owners of the mobile home park for improvements? Do they have to do any kind of improvements, or are they just guaranteed a profit?
It only guarantees a profit, you could say. A responsible park owner needs to maintain their property, take the money that the revenue that they get, all of the revenue from operating the park, and keep it in good shape. Do all the maintenance, do all the record keeping, keeping the everything up to conformance with the current laws and rules. But all this rule, all this that we're talking about today is, when you look at the total amount that they can make on that park in a given year, are they getting the same profit margin now that they got in their first year? It doesn't tell them how to spend the money.
No, I understand that.
But it does at least allow a certain profit margin.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Along those lines, it was interesting to me that the comparison is base year to current year. We know that operating margin can vary considerably, but it did look like staff and the Rent Review Board considered some averaging. I mean, my concern would be that one significant maintenance project of a particular year might drive, you know, the operating margin to zero, which does that justify a hardship exemption or change?
And that's exactly what happened. What you just described is the situation in front of us that was in front of the Rent Review Board. The amount of maintenance that was done this past year could have been enough to show a negative profit for the park. And staff recognized that, and the board recognized that, and said, let's look at the average year. In an average year, how much is spent to maintain that park? And we'll use that in the calculation for rent increase.
Okay. Thank you. And more a question back to County Council. You know, I would have thought it might be cleaner for us to simply acknowledge the withdrawal of the appeal and not wade into the substance of the issues here. On the other hand, the Rent Review Board has done a tremendous amount of work, and staff supporting it has done a tremendous amount of work, and this is a really important issue where we have to find balance and equity between the need to keep parks going and the affordability of residents.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder...
she has her light on, so I'm
okay.
Ready to...
I'm wondering whether we might need a small adjustment to the resolution. I'm looking at page 7, where we have a number of whereases. I think it would be useful to acknowledge in that resolution the withdrawal of the appeal. And in a way, I would just as soon mark, you know, hang the board's decision here mostly on that. Again, I have no complaint with the board's issues, but that seems to be the cleaner way to go here.
Ms. McDonald, you had your light on anyway. Perhaps you want to field a variety of questions. I see Mr. Seebach emerging from the depths of the Rent Control Board. But we'll let Ms. McDonald first and then go to Mr. Seebach. And I see Mr. Bordenaro raring to testify perhaps too. Well, Ms. McDonald?
Thank you. I think I'll take Supervisor Gibson's comment first. I believe that if you wish to just merely acknowledge the withdrawal of the appeal, I think we would need to clarify that the board is not ratifying and adopting the decision of the Rent Review Board. My concern was because of the nature of the Rent Review Board's decision and the way the ordinance is written, an appeal, you know, is limited to those two actions of your board. And I was concerned that, you know, that there were tenants present who might want to speak to the issue. And given that nobody has spoken, I think that, you know, that's within your discretion to just merely recognize the withdrawal. The other issue, I just wanted to clarify what the ordinance does and in terms of guaranteeing a rate of return. And it essentially tracks the constitutional guarantees for mobile home park owner, which is to retain a just and reasonable rate of return on the property. And in determining that initial base year rate of return, the Rent Review Board does have some level of discretion to determine, you know, what expenses are reasonable and what rate of return would be just and reasonable. In addition to fixing that initial rate of return, a hardship application that the mobile home park owner makes to try to get back up to that rate of return, the application and the process before the board does give them additional discretion to determine, you know, to wade into a little bit of the issues that Supervisor Meacham had discussed, which, you know, are they maintaining the property properly? So I just wanted to clarify that there is some level of discretion there that the board, the Rent Review Board, did exercise when it fixed the rent increase in this case.
Mr. Meacham, I
needed to follow up on that if I could. The percentage of guaranteed return, is this forecasted for the year ahead or for the year behind? Because if someone was going to do some improvements to the park, they would need to be able to budget that for the future. And so I'm not quite sure how that percentage of return is determined. But maybe that's the wrong time to discuss this at this point. I don't know.
I think actually staff might be able to give some more detail about exactly what numbers are put into that calculation.
Mr. Bench or Mr. Seebach, are you prepared to answer that question?
I guess I would be able to. I'm Jerry Seebach, auditor controller, and a member of the rent review board, although I was not sitting in this one. I was replaced by an alternate, the treasurer tax collector. But typically we're trying to get a balance of both. What are they actually spending and getting today, and then what do we think they're going to get and spend the next year? So there's both. And there is, I think, County Council got it on the terminology, the just and reasonable return, which is open to interpretation to start with. But there's also some language in there about, I think it's a prudent and efficient owner or something like that would get that return. So if they are not running their business in any way that would be prudent, the board can take that into account. And I've seen that go both ways. There was once there was a park that the owner did all of his own maintenance. He did, you know, he was a handyman and he was doing everything and he wasn't paying anybody to do it. And as he got older, he's, I can't keep doing this. I got to hire somebody. But that wasn't in his historical costs. So we'd use some judgment and said it's not unreasonable for him to have, a maintenance person. But on the other hand, if they just walked away and hired a management company and paid them 20% of the gross to manage it for them and the owner did nothing, we might say that's too high of an administrative cost. So the board does exercise that. Now, it's been challenged many times. This ordinance has been challenged in court. It's been challenged in front of the Board of Supervisors a number of times. And to my knowledge, the Board of Supervisors has always upheld the findings of the rent board because they do work hard work on this. You've got three other elected officials trying to do this balancing act. You've got staff, and you've got a flawed ordinance, in my view. I've been involved in it since it was passed by initiative in 1984, and it has significant flaws. So the questions you're asking are very valid questions. They're just not easily dealt with within this ordinance, and there's some unfairness. It's somebody that's been in the park forever gets the same services as somebody who moves in, and theirs is a different rate, and they're right next door, things like that. So I would hope that you would go ahead and ratify the rent board's decision and recognize that, as I think Mr. Gibson said, they had done a lot of work and staff did a lot of work on it, as they always do. Any other questions? Did I miss anything?
No, I agree, and as I listened to comments from both counsel and Mr. Seebach, I'm prepared with that motion at your pleasure, Mr. Chairman. I think it is important, actually, mm-hmm. as I consider what's before us. If one reads the findings of the Rent Review Board, there was a very careful, very methodical analysis and a careful balancing, and I think that is something that we should lend our stamp of approval to. I'm prepared to move staff's recommendation to uphold the Rent Review Board's decision.
Second.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Gibson. The only other choice we had was to get into our DeLorean and not have the hearing that we had. And affirmed by
that the motion includes that the board determines there's not a need for a second hearing.
That's correct. That would be the staff recommendation of ratifying and no second hearing needed. Supervisor Patterson was the second. Is there any further? There were edifying questions, so I do appreciate Mr. Seebach as well. If there are no further, roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. DeShera.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay, we have one more item. Do we want to take a break before that item, or do we want to go forward? We have our Ag Commissioner here, Mr. Sedevendemi. Let's go for it then. Okay, would you introduce the next item, Madam Clerk? Certainly. Thank you.
That would be item D1, submittal of the summary of the crop and livestock production statistics for 2010.
Okay, Mr. Sedevendemi's here at the lectern, our ag commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Marty Sedevendemi, agricultural commissioner. And today I'm going to give an overview of the 2010 crop statistics. But before I get into the numbers, I'd just like to state that this is a mandate from the state of California. Each agricultural commissioner is required to provide these statistics each year, and we do it in a fairly prescribed format. We outline the crop types, the acreage.
Mr. Sedevendemi, if I can just interrupt a second. Mr. Bench, if you could take that into the hallway, if you would be so kind, so that, thank you, I appreciate that. Okay, continue. Thank you, Marty.
So we outline the crop type, the acreages, production, and we value each major category. So we look at the fruit and nut category, vegetables, nursery and seed, animal industry, and also field crops. And we estimate the overall farm gate value of these products, and that's the value of the product as it comes off of the field. It in no way reflects net profit for these crops. And although there are multipliers that are developed for secondary economic value, we do not incorporate those into our report. And all of the information that we receive are from the farmers and ranchers in the community. We send out a survey each year, and we have a pretty remarkable response, about 70% response each year. And all of that information stays confidential. So we can go on to the next one, Brent. So the first slide shows the total valuation of crops over the past 10 years. And although we're seeing a struggling economy, agriculture in San Luis Obispo seems to be increasing in value. Since the 2007 downturn in the economy, crop values have been on the rise as a whole. 2010's overall value of agricultural commodities in San Luis Obispo hit a record high of $712,808,000, and that's a 14.4% increase over 2009. And what we're seeing is that this upswing is primarily due to a sharp increase in the fruit and nut category. And also, I'd just like to state that in 2009, San Luis Obispo County was ranked number 16 in the state of California for overall value. The 2010 ranking is still pending, so we'll be able to publish that when we receive it. Moving on to the next slide. This slide shows the comparison of the five major commodity groups over the past 10 years: fruit, nut, vegetable, nursery, animal, and field crops. And we'll look at these individually in the next few slides, but it's, you can certainly see that upswing in the fruit and nut category pushing the overall values higher. And the next slide shows, one more back, Brett. This shows individually the fruit and nut category. And what we saw in 2010 was a very stable wine grape industry, and we coupled with rebounding avocado yields. We saw a 527% increase in avocado yields for the year, and that's because we were coming off of two very poor growing seasons. But we also saw additional plantings of strawberry, 525 additional acres, and very strong values. And that contributed to a $94 million increase in this category since 2009. That's a 29.6% increase. So the overall value in the fruit and nut category ended up being $365,750,000. The next slide. The next category is our vegetable category. And overall vegetable values were down by about 6%. What we saw were fewer acres planted in vegetables in 2010, and the harvested acres were down by about 3%. That's about 900 acres. And what we're seeing is some of the acreage historically planted in vegetables are being converted over to strawberries, a very high dollar crop, and people are able to pay those leases on that prime land. But overall, San Luis Obispo is a prime growing area for a variety of vegetables, and we distribute products domestically and internationally. And last year, we certified over 2,500 shipments for both domestic and foreign markets. And broccoli seems to be one of our primary exports. Much of our broccoli goes to Japan and Taiwan, where a premium price is taken for that commodity. On to the next one, Brett. Thanks. Next category is our nursery and seed category. And with the downturn in the economy and the slowing of the housing market, the nursery industry has seen a downward trend since 2007. Although in 2010, it looks like we could see some possible stability with a slight 1% increase in value. And the increase that we did see is primarily due to higher values for indoor decoratives and a very stable vegetable transplant market. But outdoor ornamentals, bedding plants, sod, and ground cover were all down to varying degrees for the year. Next one. And the next category is our animal industry. And the animal industry is also showing a slight increase. We had a 3% increase in value over 2009. And we saw higher prices and heavier weights going to market, and that was from very favorable grazing conditions in 2010. And that also made up for some of the smaller herd sizes that we saw from previous drought years. In 2011, it looks like we will have, again, good grazing conditions, and hopefully that trend will continue on into the future. And finally, the field crop category. And field crops, primarily barley, grain, hay, and alfalfa hay, benefited also from the favorable weather conditions that we had. We had very strong prices, and overall this commodity group was up 22% over the 2009 value at $18,545,000. Next. And finally, the next two slides just show our top 20 crops. Again, wine grapes remain the top crop in San Luis Obispo at 24% of the overall value at over $173 million. Again, strawberries jumped in value by $50 million from 2009, and again, that was due to very strong prices and increased plantings. And avocados, again, moved from the 13th spot last year to 5th this year, again, due to those significantly higher production rates. Next one. And finally, this just rounds out our top 20, and just a little bit of trivia. Bok choy, this is the first year that bok choy has ever made the top 20, and it edged out spinach, which has been traditionally on this list. And I just like to mention that this is a very general overview of our crop stats, but we have very detailed report that's available to all of our three offices, and also we have an electronic copy available on our website. And just in closing, I'd just like to acknowledge all of the farmers and ranchers in San Luis Obispo County providing food and fiber to our county, contributing to our local economy, and also for providing their input into our processes and helping us find those reasonable and logical approaches to the issues that we face. And also I'd like to thank my staff for compiling this data. I think they do a great job, and also for their efforts in protecting agriculture locally and abroad. Thank you.
Okay.
Any questions for me?
Yeah, I think we do.
Okay.
For our Ag Commissioner, Mr. Sedevendemi. Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sedevendemi, you mentioned that the broccoli exports typically go to the Pacific Rim, and it's the number three crop in value in the county. I'm just curious, where does cauliflower go?
Well, you know, I don't know if we export a lot of cauliflower as far as the certificates that we issued. That's something I could look into, but I don't have.
I was just curious. I can't be sure who eats that, but
task it
I
early.
Was just curious. It's number 11 value-wise.
With a bullet.
Amazes me. But you mentioned that about 70% of the farmers that you survey respond. And I'm curious, do you extrapolate the values from the information you get from them? Is that plus 700 plus million dollar value of crops. Does that represent the 70% of the that you have responses for, or are you projecting out to get the total value countywide? I know that you have statistics on acreage of crops planted and that sort of thing, and I'm just curious if that represents the total value or just the information that you actually receive back from the farmers and growers.
Yeah, it depends on what information we get, and at times we have to extrapolate using statewide data, so we fill in the gap with that information to get an overall county valuation.
Okay, so that does really represent the total rather than just the 70%.
Yes, it does.
Very good. Thank you.
Mr. Meacham?
Right. I know you mentioned earlier in your presentation that this doesn't represent any multipliers. Are we looking at the possibility of maybe doing a report that would suggest some of these multipliers? I know that we had that discussion prior, and a young man mentioned that he had one, I think, out of Ventura County or Monterey County, I can't remember which. I would be really curious to see what those multipliers would represent in terms of jobs and the trickle-down from agriculture.
Yeah, we've been in discussions with UC Cooperative Extension because UC Davis provides multipliers every so often. They do a study, and I don't know if there's been one recently. I think I can't even remember the last one that they did, but we can take that multiplier and possibly apply it to our values to get that information.
That'd be great. I'd appreciate seeing something like that. Thank you, sir.
Sure. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I endorse that idea. You mentioned that these are farm gate values, money coming, gross proceeds, not reflective of profit, and I'll testify to that. But I would notice that, well, my crop didn't make the top 20, so I'm a little bit disappointed. Yeah, right. Well, it's truly astounding to ponder $9.2 million worth of cauliflower. I mean, that's a lot of cauliflower. Yeah, exactly. But my point being that which isn't profit to the farmers is actually going to the materials and the services that are needed to make this happen. A certain amount goes to the bank, of course. But I think the other interesting, this is a wonderful basis, and it's obviously mandated, and it's been a tradition of this department to come forward with a really complete report, which you publish in glossy format, along with some really interesting stories of the people who are responsible. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate your acknowledgement of those folks, because they work really hard to generate $700 million worth of net crop. I think a couple of the other things that would be interesting for us to know as we move forward is local consumption of locally produced foods. You know, we have a lot of interest in that issue. The health of our direct marketing programs, the farmers markets and things like that. I think that might be a related but a very interesting statistic to include in this, mm-hmm. is to how our local markets are doing, and other things such as, you know, the trends in organic production and things like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that of course is just sent your staff into slight convulsions, I know, but it's those things that I think we need to be mindful of as we move forward, as we talk about food policy and ag policy in this county. Again, thank you very much for bringing this to our attention today.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay. Let me open it up to the public. I have no request to speak, but perhaps Mr. Cuddy has some bok choy recipes he wants to bring forward. No, I see no. So we will close it to the public, and we have happily received and filed. And thank you again, Mr. Sedevendemi.
Thank you.
For this report. And that is all for the morning. So we're going to open it up to the public on closed session. Still no takers for that. So we will close it to the public and get a time estimate for Mr. Jensen.
30 minutes.
30 minutes. Okay. We will go into closed session, and then we'll be back for our afternoon hearings at 1:30. Thank you very much.
What time do you want? Yeah.
Your microphones are live.
Okay. Well, we'll wait until it comes officially. All right. We'll get a couple more minutes, see if our... Is he joining us? Our colleague? Okay. Good afternoon and welcome back to the Board of Supervisors. And we are, I would actually entertain a motion for our presentation. That's right. Forgot.
What are we doing?
Well, we never have anything to report, but I think today we have something exciting, or do we not?
No.
All right. No official report, Mr. Jensen?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Warren Jensen, the County Council. The board did meet in closed session. No reportable action was taken.
See, you were all here for that.
Move to approve the resolution.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Gibson. Roll call vote on our presentation calendar, madam.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes, ma'am.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira, I'll indicate his absent.
He's up there somewhere. If you see our long lost supervisor, send him back. All right, we have some inspiring resolutions and presentations today. We have some heroes. We have some people who've done great work for the county on behalf of mental health and criminal justice. We also have honoring Indigenous people. So we're very excited that so many people are here. We'll begin with District 2, because that's where some heroic activities took place. And Supervisor Gibson, if you would like to call up, I know we have some of the deputies. We also have our sheriff here and dispatcher that was involved. If they want to come,
I will make a roll call here.
If the sheriff wants to call them to the lectern and then have Supervisor Gibson read the resolution in honor of them, that would be great.
That would be my pleasure.
Okay.
Come on over here. You're going to meet these people as I read the resolution. Sheriff Parkinson, did you have any opening remarks you'd like?
No, I'll let you open and then I'll close.
All right. We are also honoring today, besides Senior Dispatcher Kelly Fontes, Senior Deputy Brent Rechtfertig, Deputy Brian Jeremiah. We have a citizen from Cayucas, Mr. Ben Hunt, who I understand is not with us
at this point.
And the resolution reads as follows. Whereas on Saturday, July 9th, 2011, a 74-year-old Porterville man was visiting Cayucas when he suffered a heart attack, and bystanders called 911 and Ben Hunt from Paso Robles began CPR. And whereas the San Luis Obispo County Sheriff's Office received the emergency call and senior dispatcher Kelly Fontes dispatched Cayucas Fire Department and San Luis Ambulance. Senior Dispatcher Fontes knew deputies were in Cayucas on another call nearby and advised them of the medical incident. And whereas Senior Deputy Brent Rechtfertig and Deputy Brian Jeremiah arrived within a couple of minutes and observed Ben Hunt performing CPR, and whereas Deputy Jeremiah took over administering CPR while Senior Deputy Rechtfertig applied automatic external defibrillator to the victim, and within a short time, the man's pulse was restored, and he was transported by ambulance to the hospital. And whereas deputies then transported the man's wife and grandchildren to the hospital so the family could be with him. Now, therefore, it be resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby commend Senior Dispatcher Kelly Fontes for advising the deputies, Mr. Ben Hunt, citizen, for initiating CPR, Senior Deputy Rechtfertig, and Deputy Jeremiah for using their training and equipment, all of which resulted in saving a human life.
I'm going to give you one of these. I think they're all the same.
Kelly.
Good work.
Good try.
Why don't you guys mosey up behind your sheriff once you're done, and unless you want to get we'll get a picture with everybody. Yeah, that's good.
As you wish.
he likes to hear that.
We'll get everybody up here for a picture after the sheriff speaks.
Well, first of all, thank you. I know you have a busy schedule, and ordinarily I'd like to say that I don't like to take up your busy schedule, but for days like this, I do like to take up your busy schedule because this doesn't happen that often. Recently, I'm sure you've followed in the newspaper that we've had several tragedies, two of which occurred up at Lake Nacimiento. So when you have something like this, you certainly need to celebrate it. Brian is our newest deputy. He came on about 6 months ago now, or 5 months ago, but who's counting? Kelly's been a senior dispatcher and with us for quite some time now. I won't say how long. She's quite embarrassed to be up here, I'll point out as well. And then Brent, of course, is a senior deputy and recently promoted senior deputy about 7 months ago. I think the important part of this event is that not only did you have deputies and dispatchers working together, but you also had a citizen that stepped up, got involved, initiated CPR, called 911. The deputies were alerted because of dispatcher Kelly Fonts actually knew that they just cleared a call and was instinctive enough to send them to the call. They, of course, initiated CPR and saved a life. So I'm proud to say that they're members of the Sheriff's Office, and today we are awarding them with Distinguished Service and Life Saving. So if I can have the Undersheriff step up. I feel like the Great Oz.
I knew you were behind the curtain.
So, Board, on behalf of the Sheriff's Office, thank you for allowing them to be here. Of course, Brent, Kelly, and Brian, thank you for your service, and thank you for a great, great job.
Before we have one more honorarium to give you from our representing our assembly member, our former colleague Katja Wasagi, and Vicki Jansen is here to recognize them, and then they can all come up here with a handful of recognition. Ms. Jansen, please.
Thank you. I'm Vicki Jansen from Assemblyman Katja Wasagian's office, and we're so proud of your actions and your heroism. I think it makes us all so so proud to live in a community where a citizen and our public safety officers will step up and save a life. And I can speak, I think, on behalf of everyone in this room, how proud we all are. And I'd like to, on behalf of the Assemblymen, present you with some certificates of recognition.
Right. Now we can do the photo op, now that they have so much in their hands. If you wanna, yeah. It's like this is your paparazzi moment. There's only 30 cameras. Somewhere you'll smile.
You guys are used to taking mug shots.
Turn to the right.
Yeah. How do you know that, Supervisor Tishara?
I think that's all right.
They are live.
They are live. All right. Well, thank you very much. See, the heroes bring out the cameras. We're very thankful for our heroic members of the Sheriff's Department for their service. And we're going to move on to yet another distinction. If I could call to the lecterns former Supervisor Shirley Bianchi and Police Chief Deb Linden. And this is once these distinguished women come to our lecterns, we'll... Okay, Chief Linden, Supervisor Bianchi, it's a pleasure to have you. So I'll read the resolution, and then you can tell me. I have a whole stack of them, so I guess you guys know who this should go to. All right, Jeff will take care of that. That's good. All right, let me read this then. This resolution is recognizing the accomplishments of the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force and thanking all those who contributed to its success. Whereas the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force was established in 2003 to enhance communication among law enforcement, the county jail, the court, and mental health treatment providers regarding those individuals who suffer with mental health issues and who are arrested, incarcerated, and may be convicted of criminal law violations. And whereas following this initial achievement, the task force then worked successfully to establish processes and training that now educate law enforcement throughout the county about individuals with mental illness through the development of the Crisis Intervention Training Program and the Forensic Collaboration Team. And whereas since its creation, the task force has been an unprecedented and successful local effort that has successfully improved the response to people with mental illness who are involved with or at risk of involvement with the criminal justice system. And inasmuch as the success of the task force would not have been possible without the close collaboration of many partners, including the Behavioral Health Services Division of the Health Agency, the Sheriff Coroner, the District Attorney, Probation, the Public Defender, the Superior Courts, the San Luis Obispo Police Department, concerned members of the public, and members of the Board of Supervisors, including past Supervisor Shirley Bianchi, Jerry Lenthal, and Cacho Asagian. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby recognize the Mental Health Criminal Justice Task Force for its achievements in its 7 years of its operation and thanks to all those who have contributed to its success on behalf of the county and a grateful community. So who wants to speak first, Chief or Supervisor?
I have always learned to do what Shirley says over my career. Mr. Chair, members of the board, thank you very much. This is a tremendous honor for the entire task force and certainly for the former supervisors who were instrumental in starting the task force and moving it forward. The purpose of any task force is to identify a problem, to come up with strategies and solutions to that problem, and set goals to carry those out, and to at some point end the task force. So the fact that our task force has concluded, we see as success, not because the programs are no longer needed. I've been involved in many task forces throughout my career. Few actually accomplished their goals, let alone end in a timely manner, and fewer still create sustaining solutions. And I'm very, very proud on behalf of the task force that our Mental Health Criminal Task Force was one of those few. The collaboration was amazing, as you mentioned in the resolution. It spanned many different agencies and departments, many different stakeholders, and many different viewpoints. And the main purpose was to find, create, and implement strategies that gave us tools to better deal with individuals suffering from serious mental illness in our criminal justice system. We had lofty goals that literally changed the way we interact with people with serious mental illness in the criminal justice system at every level, from the contact our patrol officers have all the way to our court system. And the programs that were created continue today and are effective today, programs like the Crisis Intervention Team training for our officers and the Forensic Coordinating Team. I do want to especially recognize two very important people who actually started this effort very organically, and that's Officer Kathy Bianchi from the San Luis Obispo Police Department and Mike Ball from our Behavioral Health Department with the county. They formed on their own a partnership in my city to really get at these problems at the street level, and really brought information and passion to this effort, and that grew into a substantial task force and even more substantial changes, and I think they deserve special recognition. I know they're in the audience today, and I'd just love to give them a hand, if we could.
Can you get them to stand up?
They're both very unassuming. So, again, thank you on behalf of the task force for this honor. It's fantastic. And the county support of this has been unwavering. Thank you.
Chief. Supervisor Bianchi?
Yes, I was going to say relative to Mike Ball that be really careful when you talk to Mike on a gorgeous October afternoon where you feel like you're on top of the world and everything is sparkly. Because he came up to me in the parking lot after a mental health board meeting and said, you know what we need to have is a task force to deal with these issues. And I said, oh, sure, Mike. I was on top of the world that day. And 8 years later, it accomplished its task. Furthermore, this task force met at noon gave up its lunch hours for however many years, 4 years that I was there, and I guess another 4 years. It was a marvelous group of people to work with because they all knew what the problem was. They all wanted a solution, and they all worked diligently to achieve that solution. And I really want to ask Mike to stand up, whether he likes it or not. And my daughter would shoot me if I asked her to stand up. So,
and she could.
and she could. Pat, stand up. You know, in this day and age, you hear so much garbage, in my mind, about public service employees. And I have to tell you, in this county, that is not true. I mean, one can always find a rotten apple. But in the 60s, there was this great song that went around, and I won't sing it, but the lyrics were, "As you go through life, make this your whole. Regard the donut, not the hole." And that's what we've been doing with our public service employees, and today is a good day to recognize them. So thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Mr. Oquest has our certificate, so do we want to ask the members of the...
Yes, if we could have members of the task force, past and present, who are here today, come up to the front. I'll hand out the resolutions, and then we can get a group photo.
Yeah, that'd be great. So if all those who are on the task force, we do have resolutions for you. I see... Ah, here they are. They're coming to get their recognition. Okay, we'll come around. So if we scoot back down a little bit this way, we'll get a picture. You'll make us look good if you can, which is a hard task, we know. All right. Remember, you don't have to go to any more meetings together, so squeeze in. One more
time. Make sure to look thin.
I've been trying for that one. Thank you so much for your service. Appreciate it.
Thank you all.
Okay. All right. And I agree wholeheartedly with Supervisor Bianchi's sentiments. It's always good to honor people who serve our public in so many different ways. And our last presentation this afternoon, we are very happy to have Supervisor Patterson read. If Fred Collins would come up, this is to recognize Indigenous peoples, and Supervisor Patterson will read the resolution, and then we'll let you take over from there, Fred.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Chairman Hill. I want to preface my comments by saying that we've been informed that the resolution, as it went out in the agenda, had a couple of typos in it. We've corrected those on the resolutions, but of course the agenda packet, it's too late to back that out, and we have made that correction, recognizing people as peoples, as plural. And the history behind this, briefly, is Mr. Collins asked Chairman Hill and I if we would be willing to bring this resolution forward. And we've worked with Mr. Collins and other members of the Indigenous Peoples community, the Native Americans in the area, to put together this resolution, and I'm quite honored to read it. This is a resolution supporting the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. Whereas on September 13, 2007, the United Nations adopted the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples, and on December 17, 2010, the United States declared its support for the Declaration. And whereas the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples acknowledges that Indigenous peoples are equal to all other peoples and recognizes the rights of all peoples to be different, to consider themselves different, and to be respected as such. And whereas all peoples of San Luis Obispo County contribute to the diversity and richness of civilizations and cultures, which constitute the common heritage of humankind. And whereas San Luis Obispo recognizes the rights of indigenous peoples and has enhanced harmonious and cooperative relations between the county and indigenous peoples based on principles of justice, democracy, respect for human rights, non-discrimination, and good faith, and recognizes the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples as a standard of achievement to be pursued in a spirit of partnership and mutual respect. And whereas the provisions set forth in this resolution affirm that in San Luis Obispo County, the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples shall be interpreted in accordance with the principles of justice, democracy, respect for human rights, equality, non-discrimination, good governance, and good faith. Now, therefore, be it resolved and ordered that the Board of Supervisors does hereby affirm support for indigenous peoples and all races, supports this resolution, and supports the United Nations Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. To receive this copy, and I know many of you have come long distance to be here this afternoon, and if you'd like to take a few minutes to speak to this, we'd be happy to hear that. And there are extra copies.
Chairman Adam Hill, Supervisor Jim Patterson, Supervisor Bruce Gibson, Supervisor Frank Meacham, Supervisor Paul Teixeira. You know, it's interesting how, you know, we've all become friends, and I think this is probably the most important thing to have happen in a community of indigenous people and people who guide the county. Being friends, we take things out of our way to understand each other as human beings. And, you know, there's a lot of laws and there's a lot of things that guide us in our work and our daily work. But being real human beings to each other, as we are neighbors and caretakers of this wonderful land that we live in, I thank you and I honor you very much for that opportunity and the way that you treat the Native American community. I also want to thank you for being the first. You are the first governing body in the United States to pass a resolution supporting the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous People, and I want to give you a big hand for that. That says a lot about your character, and I believe that from this point on, your lives will change. This is a life-changing situation here that you've endorsed and that you've put on the table for Native Americans. So, you know, we give you our blessings and we give you our spirit, and, you know, your lives will change in a good way. So there are several people here that are leaders of councils from the Chumash Nation, and I'd like to have them say a few words. And then, again, I can't thank you enough for this opportunity and the feeling that we're getting here from this great event. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
First off, I'd like to have Mark, oh, for Benice. Benice is a chairperson for the Coastal Band Chumash Nation, and she's here to speak on this issue.
Welcome.
Atu Atu, San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors. Me too, Benice Miller Forte. Hello, Slo County Board of Supervisors. My name is Benice Miller Forte. I am the tribal chairperson of the Coastal Band of the Chumash Nation, which consists of families from Santa Barbara County, Ventura County, and San Luis Obispo County. As of April 2011, our community also adopted the Declaration of on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. We believe that implementing this declaration will end discrimination of Indigenous peoples' rights to spiritual traditions, culture, lands, and natural resources that has hindered our people for so long. The exploitation of our people's language, culture, lands, and religion created by the European settlement caused our spiritual leaders to go underground. We pray for all people's well-being, for the fire, clean water, the four-legged, and most of all, Hutash, our Mother Earth, which are all vital to the web of life. This declaration relieves that oppression that Indigenous peoples experience to this very day. It acknowledges our human rights and our right to be treated with equality. The declaration honors Indigenous peoples' knowledge, culture, and traditional practices as key components to the environment. We gather tule for our baskets, willow for our ops, elderberry for sustenance, and to make wansok so we can sing and pray. When we gather, we believe to before we take, we give. We do this by being aware of natural resources as a living resource, being aware of its environment to make sure it is in good health and abundance, praying to it and giving thanks to what we are receiving from it. Adopting this resolution will promote, as you said in your resolution, the partnerships between Indigenous peoples, government agencies, and non-governmental agencies to benefit the community. Adopting this declaration, as you also said, is a good faith effort. It will help relieve and heal that oppression that has been for so long. It will allow us to open our arms and help educate the community on the health of the environment and to help protect those resources that are so vital to us. Our community would like to thank you and the community as a whole of San Luis Obispo County for adopting this invaluable and resourceful document. And with that, I would like to close with the song. Pitayana, Pitayana, Pitayanan hi pi washiyu. Pitayanan, Pitayanan, Pitayanan hi pi washiyu. She on tikich, iki akaklu. She on tikich, iki akaklu. She on tikich, she on tikich. And what that song talks about is that we are alive. We are here. Come walk with us. Come join us. And let's share our knowledge. Thank you.
Mrs. Marcus Lopez, Chairperson, Barbarino Chumash.
Welcome.
Honorable Chair, Board of Supervisors, thank you, Mr. Fred Collins, for allowing me to speak on this northern portion of the Chumash Nation. President Obama, the executive director, the chief, your head office of these United States of America, stated that aspirations it affirms, referring to the Declaration, including the respect for the institutions and rich cultures of Native peoples, are ones we must always seek to fulfill. I want to be clear, he stated. What matters far more than words, what matters far more than resolutions or declarations, are actions to match those words. this document that the world accepted and you so courageously embraced speaks to the harmony, the breadth, the depth of what civilization from here on out will be like. News of the weather, tsunamis, past Holocaust and genocide, stock exchange, and whether it be Main Street or Wall Street, are all affecting us. But together as human beings, come together and launch this declaration and put life so we be liberty and justice. Chumash people are maritime people. We are a people of families up and down the coast that have families through all the continental United States. The Pacific Islanders, Micronesian people, our families stretch to whole what we now call the Pacific. I want to sing this song for the launching of this vessel. Launching of this vessel of our community, non-Indian community, Indian community, officials, the unofficial spokespersons for our nations. And it means tranquility and peace on our journey. Tranquility and peace, how we embrace ourselves for our families, your children, grandchildren, our children, their grandchildren to work together. Chimawish Adipak, Chimawish. Chimawish Adipak, Chimawish. Chimawish Adipak, Chimawish. Chimawish Adipak, Chimawish.
Thank you.
Robert Olivera Cuellar, he is the chair for the Bakersfield Chumash Tribal Council.
Welcome.
How do you do, members of the board? I'm glad to be here today to speak to you in regards to my indigenous people, that I'm just one of thousands of indigenous people throughout Southern California. My people have been suffering a lot, and I'm glad for the declaration of the indigenous people here in San Luis Obispo. All my family in Bakersfield actually paid my way up here so that I could be here to speak for them and to be proud. They are very proud to be part of the indigenous documentation that you wrote as members of the board. I want to thank you for each and every one. And I'm speaking for members from the Tejon area, San Emilio, Bakersfield, up in Ventura, in Saracoy, Ojai, San Juan Capistrano, the Digueños, Santa Barbara, Santa Ynez. All these are Chumash people, and they are indigenous people, and I think that you already know mostly all the tribes that are around San Luis Obispo, Santa Barbara, and Santa Maria, and up and down and through the coast of Southern California. I want to thank you from within my heart and in my spirit and my soul, and I want to thank you for my grandparents and all my tribal members and all my ancestry that has long been gone before me. I thank you, and I bow before you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Kareen Fairbanks, American Indian Movement.
Welcome.
First, I'd like to say good afternoon to everyone that's here, and especially the County Board of Supervisors. Thank you for letting me speak. Fred, thank you for letting me participate. First of all, my name is Kareen Fairbanks, and I'm the director of the American Indian Movement Southern California chapter. And I'm honored to have lived in this county most of my life as a guest in this beautiful land. And I'm honored to be able to participate in this historical event, especially when I look around this room and see many elders and leaders that have much more experience than I do and probably have a lot more a lot more to say than I do. But I just want to say the American Indian Movement has been working on the rights of indigenous people for over 40 years. And when we are a national and international organization, and when the DRIP document was presented to the world community, it was embraced by the American Indian Movement. And so when we saw that Fred was taking the initiative to do what he's done and that you all had adopted the declaration, we were very happy and excited to see that this was a milestone. This is a historic event considering the Holocaust that California Native people have experienced historically. And there's been no resolution to that. And this is a first step in that direction. And I want to applaud all of you for being true civic leaders for your community and to your community, for role modeling, to role model that indigenous people to Native people do have human and civil rights. The other thing I kind of wanted to say the other thing that you role model to your community and to the other cities around you and actually nationwide, that you're role modeling how to be a respectful guest on the lands in which you live in. You're learning how to work side by side with the nation whose land you live on, historic lands that you live on. And this is a beautiful thing. This has not been done or acknowledged before. So again, I want to thank you wholeheartedly from the American Indian Movement of Southern California, because we fight for these civil rights and these human rights. I want to thank you. We feel a little more welcomed here in San Luis Obispo. Thank you.
Thank you.
As a tradition, we pass out gifts when it's a good time, and I want to pass out a gift to each one of you. I guess whoever wants to come up, we're going to take pictures here in front with the Board of Supervisors, so come on up.
Okay, yeah, please. We would be honored.
I got to get my tomahawk.
They call them canes now.
Get it back. We have to have some of the smaller ones in front if we're get everybody in the picture.
Need to squeeze it together here.
We're really grateful for all of you for making it here today. Yeah, scoot in so that you can make it, or otherwise you'll be cut out of the picture. We need you to make us look good here.
All about being in.
Come on up front.
There we go. There's a.
Okay.
We good?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
It's okay.
Coming.
Thank you. Thank you for being here.
I want to thank all of you who made a trip here this afternoon to be with us and to certainly acknowledge that we recognize and appreciate the contributions that Native peoples have made to the land that we live on here in San Luis Obispo. Certainly the contributions you've made here are evident throughout the Central Coast, and we'll continue to honor and recognize those contributions.
Thank you very much. We have food out at our farm afterwards. If you guys are hungry after about 3 or 4 o'clock, I know you're going to put a big day here. But come to our farm and see our vertical growing out there, how we're doing our sustainability, and join us in food.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's our honor, and we appreciate you all. Thank you so much. Eric, I had a request. I'm sorry, I didn't see it until now that this was on this item, but I guess you want to, as our staff is getting in, Eric will give some final comments. Sorry, Eric. Well, I didn't realize he was going to tell us.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and speaking as someone with roots across the sea, I would like to thank you for this. Whatever our ancestry, none of us will be whole until balance is restored. And this is an important step, a step that will lead to changes in thinking. You make lots of decisions about the land, and I'd like to share a quote that will help you think deeper than categories like property or zoning. This is from Ursula Le Guin's Dancing on the Edge of the World. Quote, California was not empty when the Anglos came. Despite the efforts of the missionaries, it was still the most heavily populated region in North America. What the whites perceived as a wilderness to be tamed was in fact better known to human beings than it has ever been since, known and named. Every hill, every valley, creek, canyon, gulch, gully, draw, point, cliff, bluff, beach, bend, good-sized boulder, and tree of any character had its name, its place in the order of things. An order was perceived of which the invaders were entirely ignorant. Each of those names named not a goal, not a place to get to, but a place where one is, a center of the world. There were centers of the world all over California. The six directions can meet only in lived time, in the place people call home, the seventh direction, the center. Unquote. Seeing the people who showed up for this reminds us that many of these names and their stories are remembered and will be remembered by future generations. Again, I'd like to thank you for taking this important step, which will help you to remember that every place you talk about and act on is a center of the world, and every living being affected by your decisions, human and otherwise, is a center of the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Eric, for those concluding thoughts. It was very nice. And we shall be moving into our afternoon hearing. Again, thank you. Madam Clerk, could you introduce this item, C4?
C4 is a hearing to consider a request for an amendment to the San Luis Obispo County Land Use Ordinance, Nacimiento Area Plan, Heritage Ranch Village Planning Area Standards, and Land Use Element of the General Plan and Final Action on all previously given tentative approval. First District, recommend approval and instruct chairperson to sign.
Thank you. Ms. Nall, or actually I see Ms. Griffin, who's going to probably then kick it off to Ms. Nall. We'll do this in the proper fashion.
Pretty much. Thank you, Cami Griffin, County Planning. Good afternoon, members of the board. This is your summer general plan amendment cycle. It's unusual in that it only has one item, so you'll be taking both tentative and final action today on the one item before you. And with that, I'll turn it over to Karen Nall, who's the project manager.
Good afternoon, board. Karen Nall with the planning staff. Today, before you, we have a request for a general plan amendment. There's basically two parts. One is to redo, basically, the planning area standards for Heritage Ranch Village, and also to rezone approximately 70 acres of open space land to residential single family. A little history, the Heritage Ranch Village was created through a specific plan back in 1972. It was incorporated into the land use element in 1980. The most recent activity is there was a dispute between the Homeowners Association and some of the largest landowners who are actually here today, part of this application. And the dispute was over how much open space, where open space was actually calculated, and the remaining ability to develop vacant land. This dispute was resolved through a settlement agreement in 2006. And part of the general plan amendment for you today is helping move that agreement along. This is a category map of the community. The community has multifamily, single family, and also large lot, suburban, and residential rural. There's also quite a bit of recreation activities centered around the lake, also campgrounds. Brand new marina was redone last year, and we're proud to say a new grocery store has been constructed out there. And if you haven't gone to that store, it's a wonderful store. Basically, the planning area standards, we're doing a major rewrite. It's a comprehensive update. We're deleting obsolete standards and adding some new standards specifically for tree replacement, botanical and biological surveys, and we've added some low impact design features. The other proposed addition is an open space table. It's found on C416 of your packet, and this outlines where the remaining open space will actually fall. Currently, there's 4,135 acres of open space. Per the settlement agreement, the open space will increase slightly to 5,200. That's an increase of 129 acres through this update before you today. Moving on, here's a map that shows where those open space lands will actually be. So it's spread out throughout the community. And the second part of the request is to actually rezone 70 acres that is currently in open space to single family. This map shows where those three areas are. Again, you could see they're adjacent to existing development. Here's an aerial that shows those three sites as well. And then I do have one minor correction for you on page C419. Under G3, which is the subdivision design standards for residential single family, we'd like to add four words. So following proposed subdivisions, we'd like to add comma, which require open space, comma. And that change is needed because currently only clustered subdivisions are allowed in the single-family category. With the changes proposed, traditional subdivisions will also be allowed.
Can you read that whole sentence just so we're clear?
The whole sentence would be proposed subdivisions, comma, which require open space, comma, shall provide open space areas with uses limited to agricultural uses, hiking, and riding trails and facilities for drainage, comma, parking, comma, and utilities.
Thank you.
And that's all. Ends my presentation, and we're hoping you'll approve the negative declaration and approve the changes proposed.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Snow. Let me see if there are questions for my colleague, Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just about the construction of that last sentence, and I would certainly defer to a former instructor of English, but is
that's why I asked. It seemed, in my marginal comments, I would have written clunky.
No.
Who reads
these things? Mr. Chairman, we need to strive for clarity here, because we know if we don't, we'll be back in a hearing before this board on a question. And let me just try to understand the intent is that all future proposed subdivisions are going to require open space, right?
No.
Okay.
So that's the difference. The current rules is all subdivisions within single family are required to do cluster subdivisions.
Okay.
And in a cluster, part of a cluster is open space.
Okay.
So the change here is that there may be subdivisions in the single family category in the future that will not be required to provide open space within their subdivision.
Okay. Are those areas of the ranch that will require open space called out and
yes.
Specified? So maybe we should refer to future subdivision of certain specified areas will require, shall provide open space areas, as indicated in the table, and maybe this is something we can hammer out, but I'm more concerned about specificity than fluency, but that was my question. We can get back to that if we need to.
Do we want to let one of our county councils muse over the specificity and fluency while we continue? We'll let you guys see if there's Ms. McDonald is ready to.
I think I'd like a couple minutes to see how that would play out.
Okay. For the muse to strike you.
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. Okay. Further questions on staff, because I do have some requests from the public. So if there aren't questions for the staff right now, I will open it up to David Watson, followed by Linda Ritchie, please.
Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the board. My name is Dave Watson. I'm here on behalf of the applicant today. To give her a couple of minutes might require me to stretch a little bit. We're actually here in support of the staff's recommendation and your Planning Commission's detailed analysis and recommendation of the amendments. This is really the first comprehensive update, as Karen pointed out, in really almost 40 years. And the ranch and its original plan that was implemented over the 70s, 80s, and 90s achieved a variety of goals that were established very clearly. But as you get towards the end of a project, you begin to look at the details of that early planning and realize that it's time to update it. And so that's really what we're here about today. The process when we acquired property at Heritage and allowed us to begin to interact with HROA, the Heritage Ranch Owners Association, who is essentially the recipient of all of the development projects within their master association, and also the recipients of the open space dedications within the village area. It was important for us to sit down and work through those various nuances of how we would finish the development of the area. And so I think the table that's on page C416 of the packet that I have is the table of open space to be provided that Supervisor Gibson was referring to. So we're in concurrence with the clarification and the effort to craft language today. And again, we're really here to answer questions and any background that you might be curious about. Otherwise, we appreciate your time and would request your approvals today.
Okay. Any questions for Mr. Watson?
I'll stand at the ready.
Okay. Thank you, Dave. Ms. Ritchie?
Good afternoon. Sorry, I have a cold. I'm Linda Ritchie, General Manager of the Heritage Ranch Owners Association, and I'm primarily here just to support the project on behalf of HROA. And we've worked for many years now with the developers on this, and I'm just here to answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Any questions for Ms. Ritchie? All right. I see our scribners going at it. Are we in the mind of making a change for specificity or fluency, do you think? Or, well, we can take a break and have you. I mean, it's up to you whether you think you can do it.
Actually, we think we came up with a very, very simple solution, and that's just to say all proposed cluster subdivisions and then the rest of the sentence, because a cluster subdivision is the type of subdivision that requires open space.
Okay, so do we want to hear the whole, or at least the first part of the sentence?
All proposed cluster subdivisions shall provide open space areas with uses limited to ag uses, hiking, riding trails, and facilities for drainage, parking, and utilities. I might like to break out that second sentence. The second sentence is an added sentence. It talks about an open space buffer of no less than 200 feet between existing and proposed residences shall be maintained between new land division and the Ibis Lane residential area. That 200-foot buffer is needed whether it's a cluster or not. So I'm thinking if we move that sentence down or set it as a separate bullet.
Yeah, so the all proposed cluster subdivisions shall provide open space areas with uses limited to would be 3 baby A.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next sentence would be 3 baby letter B, and then the final sentence would be C.
Appropriate would be the final sentence. Appropriate.
Right.
Buffers 3C. Okay.
So it'll kind of look like what you see at the top of that page with a numbered and then 3 lettered paragraphs.
Mr. Meacham?
Just want to make sure the applicants, do you have any issue with those changes?
I've been Dave Watson again, writing furiously. I think I understand it. I do think that for clarity, again, it may be helpful to make reference to the table on C-416, because the issue for us is to make sure that as each of those areas develop, they provide minimally the open space associated with that table. So if that's appropriate for staff, I think that idea of separating them into A, B, C would work, provided that we make reference to that table.
So C-419, those three items, if there was somewhere in there that it referenced the table on page C-416,
that open space areas consistent with that table.
With that table.
That would make the loop, I believe. Does that make sense?
Do you have an issue with that?
No, we could have it read consistent with the Heritage Ranch open space inventory table.
That makes sense. That's appropriate.
So then how would we list these now, Cammie?
So A would be all proposed cluster subdivisions shall provide open space areas consistent with the Heritage Ranch open space inventory table, with uses limited to agricultural uses, hiking and riding trails, and facilities for drainage, parking, and utilities. B would read an open space buffer of no less than 200 feet between existing and proposed residences shall be maintained between any new land division and the Ibis Lane residential area. And then C would be appropriate open space buffers shall be established through the land division process.
And at the risk of
keeping us
confusing things, I would only suggest that the top level issue is actually the last one, that appropriate. I would just switch what we have labeled A with what we have labeled C, because indeed, as we design subdivisions, it is the most general sense that appropriate buffers should be established with the land division process. And then you're listing two specific subcases of that. But yeah, I would not fall on my sword on that one.
Works for staff.
Works for us.
Okay, thanks.
Staff, applicant, everybody.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman.
Siebelhut, do you?
Can I
just have a minute to confer?
Please.
Can I ask a quick question?
Yes, sorry. We'll let you confer and we'll talk to our county council here.
I just wanted to make sure that if we are tying the limitation or the discussion of cluster subdivisions to the open space inventory table, are we leaving anything out? If we are limiting this subdivision of this section to apply only to the open space inventory table, is there some instance we would want it to apply to something that's not in the table? Just want to make sure we know that that's how it would apply.
If I may,
please,
Chair.
Please state your name for the record, Mr.
Chair. I'm sorry. My name is Robert Schiebelhut. I'm associated with HR Holdings. Supervisor Gibson, Council. We need to make sure it's kind of a delicate issue, and I'm not exactly sure how to solve it, but let me give you an example. The open space was increased by over 1,000 acres, and the concept was we, through the settlement, as among ourselves, not binding on the county, but we involved the county staff during the process, was we created the open space areas. And so the effect of that, for instance, if we look at the table on the open space inventory, there's a reference around the middle of it says tract HRH subdivision, and there's a contribution of 89 acres of open space. What that involves is a two-acre piece of land that's surrounded, at the entrance, surrounded by houses. There's just happened to be left, which we inherited, a two-acre piece, on which we have proposed eight conforming lots. Now, if in that situation, if we were to have a buffer imposed, if someone were to say, and it's not specifically stated this way, but there's a 200-foot buffer on Ibis Lane, that resulted from a lot of discussion. This whole settlement process through Ms. Ritchie was run by the homeowners out there and several kind of hearings. And out of that, there was this concern, one concern in the Ibis Lane area, and that 200-foot buffer was a result of the discussion with the residents, which then ended up being incorporated into the settlement agreement. Back to this small two-acre piece, if we were to have a 200-foot buffer, there would be no lots. So what the sense of the settlement, as one who was involved in drafting it, was that we, as among ourselves, were going to agree to where this 5,100 acres of open space is. And if you look track by track by track, that's what the intent of this is. When somebody comes along and says, okay, I want to do the remainder of track 1910, say the second one, that's going to involve 703 acres of open space. When you do track remainder 1910, 100 acres and so on. So if we leave open the possibility for appropriate buffers, you know, that I don't really know what that means in the context. Does that mean that we're going to now add to the 5,200 acres of open space? So it's and the other aspect of it is what we tried to do was develop areas such as the ones that were depicted earlier that are next contiguous to existing residential areas. Well, it's designed, as among us, is to be just an extension of it. Well, now if all of a sudden we have to put a buffer in between it, and if you look at all the areas that we've done, the settlement agreement contemplated approximately 700-800 potential lots, about 2,100 to 2,900. If you look at what could happen if you did the 200-foot, you'd be down about 400 lots. So the whole essence of the settlement agreement would be destroyed. So this language, for your information, was added to suggestion after public hearing at the Planning Commission. That's where this last sentence comes from. And we see it as a problem. And with County Council staff and the supervisors, we're looking for a solution. The language originally proposed seemed like it was some clarification, but there still is that third sentence, which may become the first sentence, and you know, where does that leave us? I mean, it leaves it as a threat to the,
so
to the intent.
Just to clarify your comments, Mr. Schiebelhut, the original proposal that had just added that clause that Karen read out was what you were comfortable with.
Yes, because we think the interpretation would be, get back to the 2 acre, is that that wouldn't require open space, because we could tie it directly back into the table and say the HR subdivision contemplated a division of 2 acres in exchange for 89 acres of open space.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm trying to simply make this document conform to agreements that are in place that are the basis of
yes.
it. I'm not trying to change anything here. And I thought I understood the table on page 16, and now I'm not so sure. It is titled Heritage Ranch Open Space Inventory. And the first column is, you know, the column seems to reference various places that are labeled as approved open space, within the village, outside the village, or whatever. And then in the second column, there's the acres in each of these different specified places.
Yes.
Are these individual acre numbers, are they within, for instance, let me just go down.
Yes.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, remainder of track 1910, fifth line, has 100 individual acres associated with it. Are those 100 acres within the remainder of tract 1910?
Yes.
Yes, they are.
And are they intended to be set aside as open space when something happens within the remainder of tract?
Has to be per the agreement.
So the open space that's going to be set aside is within the same parcel, parent parcel, basically, that's going to potentially be subdivided?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly right, Mr. Watson?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. That's the intent.
Okay.
So there's each of these. You start with the 3,059, and the 393, for instance, has already been subject of a county open space easement, so that's been done. And then, but as these future subdivisions come forward, each of them will be required to contribute that amount of open space in connection with. So when we, in order to get final of that 2 acres, then we have to deed the 89 acres.
Okay. So it would seem then that if we go back to page 19 and item C, that the intent of this, let me see if I can summarize the intent of this, and maybe we can get, again, starting with the last sentence, appropriate open space, let me just strike buffers, shall be established through the land division process. And it's really talking about what's happening in the table that's on page 16.
Yes.
So I think we could, yeah, we could specifically reference that.
Actually, I think that would work.
This falls under residence of single family, which is track 1910, 1990 is zoned residential suburban. So the G3 just relates to residential single family zoning.
Okay.
Well, and it was part of the plan because clusters were required.
Okay. So we could say, I mean, we could rewrite 3 as saying appropriate open space. And I think we get a little confused between buffers and open space.
Right.
The area around Ibis Lane seems to be open space, whether we call it a buffer or not. We could simply say appropriate open space shall be established through the land division process in accordance with table,
yes,
whatever that is.
That's the way to say it, I think.
Second sentence is, and let's label it B, an open space buffer of no less than 200 feet shall be, you know, specifically maintained between any new land division and the Ibis Lane residential.
Yes.
And C, all other cluster or all proposed cluster subdivisions shall provide open space areas. Again, we could reference that table if we wanted.
That's consistent with our agreement and HRA. Yes.
I think by eliminating the buffer, we'll accomplish what needs to be,
yes,
done. I can agree with you.
And start, and again, specifically referencing that table when it's appropriate, yes, to reference that table.
I agree.
Okay.
Thank,
yes,
you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Mr. Watson, fine?
Concur. Yes.
Okay.
Makes sense.
All right. Do we have that?
Yes. I did want to point out that the language appropriate open space buffers shall be established through the land division process was language that was added at Planning Commission. If you go to your page 2-24, you'll see that language wasn't there. So this helps to clarify language that was added at the Planning Commission. So my understanding then would be that G3 would read, A, appropriate open space shall be established through the land division process consistent with the Heritage Ranch open space inventory table. B would be an open space buffer of no less than 200 feet between existing and proposed residences shall be maintained between any new land division and the Ibis Lane residential area. And C would be all proposed cluster subdivisions shall provide open space areas with uses limited to ag, hiking, facilities for drainage, parking, and utilities.
Okay.
Yes, applicants.
You ready?
We're all good. Okay. We're closing it to public comment now. I think we've all agreed on.
Mr. Chairman,
all of our,
I'll make a motion that we adopt the negative deck and approve the general plan amendment with the revisions on G3 that constitute A, B, and C.
Second. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
To defer to the North County.
Okay. Moved by Supervisor Meacham, second by Supervisor Patterson. Is there any further discussion? Roll call, Madam Clerk.
Mr. Meacham.
Yes.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Mr. Teixeira.
Yes.
Mr. Hill.
Yes. Okay.
And we are waiving the reading of the.
We are waiving the reading.
Waiving the reading.
All right. Thank you.
We're waiving.
And that will do it for today. We'll see you next Tuesday. We are adjourned until next Tuesday.